going. Very excited because it's been a long off season. Bruno Salson here with two new, well, sort of new in one case, additions to the Hifl Insiders family. First, let me introduce you from Mexico City. Well, by way of Mexico City, El Model, Mike Martel. Mike, welcome to the Insiders.
Well, thank you there, Bruno. It's really nice to be here. It's nice to make it to the big time, if you will, with ESPN. Very thankful for the position altogether as an insider, given circumstances and how my career sort of came to a screeching halt. But
I had to retire early this past offseason.
But I was happy to still help out in any way I could with Mexico City. We did win the APL championship just this past season, and that was a joy to be a part of. It's nice. I would have liked to have added a Hifl ring at one point before I could call it a career, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, you got one. So from one quarterback to another quarterback, joining or rejoining the Hifl ring, my man, we go way back like in seats on a 69 Cadillac. Jim Zebo, what's up, man?
Hey, Bruno. Good to see you again. It's been a while.
You went and did like a mission in Missouri?
I tried. I was brought in for one thing, and it didn't work out the way I was expected it to or the way I was kind of pitched it would. But hey, it all in the end. There's a plan for the man upstairs, and I am happy to be back here right beside you and now with Mr. Martel here so we can talk about the Hifl and the next coming up season.
I'm excited. But, hey, look. I don't know what the man upstairs got planned for you, but he planned to get you some nice fat stacks in your wallet.
I hope so.
So I'm glad to have you back. Roy has taken on kind of the ESPN family's been kind of shifted around a little bit. Roy will be available, but you know, I know you the listeners all love him. He's a little bit more SEC Network Central now with your brother Tim Zebo. He's over there.
He's keeping busy, to say the least.
I'm sure he's gonna. He's already been blowing up my phone since I got the job back, saying, "Hey, I gotta let you know that when it comes to breaking down the Southeastern Division, I'm pretty much out for the day." So I'm sure he'll be back for that. He loves that, especially. You know, I'm sure when he gets to talk about Alabama and, you know,
all that they can do, the champions, the DC Cobras.
Yeah, he's going to be all over all that, and that's fine. I mean, I love what I do, and I love to be here as much as possible, but if Mr. Baker wants to come back and take a seat in the chair, more than happy to have him take my spot.
And Jimmy had a polite incident with police during his offseason. We all know Jimmy likes to party, and he left his party. He had some synthetic marijuana. He's doing all right, folks.
Is he being chased by a dragon, too?
No.
Is he still upset about the fact that nobody brought him into the fold like they did with Jim last season? Trying to keep the whole insider tradition?
I feel like he thought he could get a job. But I told him, like, the GMs now, we have a lot of new GMs. Not a lot. We have a handful of new GMs. They're smarter than the previous generation, if you will. They're not going to just hire somebody just... because you know you're a good locker room. The other thing is, we all know Jimmy. I'll be straightforward with Jimmy. He's not the best locker room guy. I see him in the locker room at ESPN, and he's, you know, treating people. He's Jimmy's a big bully. It's just how it is. I'd be a big bully too if I was him. But I digress because we're not talking about Jimmy Minor. We're not talking about the Hifl Insiders because. That's weird because that'd be a lot of very meta. We're talking Hifl season 7. Want to get the season 6 congratulations out of the way. Congratulations to GM John, who we will have prior to the breakdown of the Southeast Division. Congratulations to him and his DC Cobras on winning the Impact Bowl last season. Congratulations to Larry Wright for being inducted into the Hall of Fame, being the first Hall of Fame entry in the Hifl Hall of Fame.
Definitely.
Congratulations to the fans of Missouri. Oh, that's not the congratulations. That's the apologies part. Okay, we'll get to that later. That
was almost Zambrano-esque right there.
I almost...
We'd like to thank all the great fans from the state of Lincoln for listening to the show this week.
Have you seen the meme that's been going around?
I have. It's fantastic.
It got sent on a chain email to the entire office. I had a good laugh at it.
That's good. How do you like in the offices there, Mike?
It's cozy. I like it.
People at ESPN, they take care of us well. So we're going to break down the season like we did last year, division by division. This year, we're going to do it a little differently. I think last year we went in almost an alphabetical order, or from the best team from the previous year to the worst. This year we're going to go worst to the best, because the best teams normally don't change too much, and that's what makes them kind of the best teams. And, we need to focus on the bad teams, because by the end of the season, we weren't talking about that much. Start with Long Beach, the season 5 champions, who had a nightmare season because their starting quarterback broke his neck in the Impact Bowl, then came back and broke his neck again. We're talking about Stephen Crawford. But, Jim, you've been a player in multiple sports now. Have you ever seen a GM be told that he's going to be fine throughout? He gets an off season and a couple games to ensure his security in his job, and then promptly get traded.
Yeah. I was surprised it happened, but really with the way things were going, and we all know that GM Poncho, especially if you follow further back before he joined the High Impact Football League, when he was in the National Baseball League, he has a very bad reputation for sticking to his guns almost to a fault. And in this case, it was one of those situations where everything seemed okay. All he had to do was really renegotiate the contract and keep the head coach, Anderson Ginobili, there in place. And they were going to move around and try to regroup and come back for this coming season. And then contract negotiations broke down over what I'm hearing was like an alleged $500,000. And that was the final straw for Sir Arthur Curry. And, it was shocking, but they didn't fire him. And I actually think the move was ingenious because they traded GM Poncho.
And
they got back and Armand Block, who, they have two very talented tight ends, so losing one isn't that big a deal, really. But they acquired a pair of first-round picks. They got future picks. Or did they get a future pick? I know they got second and third.
They had two first-round picks, a second and a third. And
Alonzo Leitner, who was a very underrated corner, came from out of nowhere last season. And now it looks like this year he's going to be one of those guys that's trying to break into that top-tier category for cornerbacks. And, it was a move that Sir Arthur Curry would have been really foolish not to make once Alabama was willing to make such a deal. Mm-hmm. And Alabama had just had so much trouble getting a GM. They were desperate. They had already gone through one or two during the season and then the off season trying to figure out what was going to go on. They decided to go with, an established championship-winning general manager.
See, it's weird because I got two former players. Normally, maybe there's one. I got two former players. Mm-hmm. Mike, in your career, you probably had a couple GM changes.
Yeah, we saw one to two different ones over during my time in Mexico City for sure.
So was this I wouldn't say it was a rug pulled out, but like the whole floor was just kind of removed. It just, somebody snapped their fingers and the floor is all out because out of under this GM. Like, as a player, how do you – what do you think is going through the minds of, say, like a Stephen Crawford, somebody who, was GM Poncho's, guy that he said, hey, he made the move to acquire him from Lincoln, and he kind of gave all the credit to their Impact Bowl to him, and then he stuck by him throughout his broken neck rehabbing the first time, and, it looked like it was going to be a second time. Like, how do you think a guy like him who's now – not only coming back from a second broken neck, and who's trying to change his style and his career, now he has to have another GM who's like, well, if I don't do this, I'm done. I have to prove I can't just be okay. I have to be good. Like, how does that go through? What's going through your mind? Like, if you're Stephen Crawford,
it's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of uncharted waters where you have a situation that you had gotten used to that was your comfort zone. And for years, Stephen Crawford had a really good comfort zone in Lincoln with his career. He was on pace, I believe, to even at one point in time, I'm not sure how many records has he broken, but if there are any quarterback records in the Lincoln Pride, I'm pretty sure he holds quite a few of them in terms of passes and all that good stuff. But to me, it feels just that a lot of uncharted waters, and you don't know what the other guy's going to do. You knew what you had with the devil, if you will, that had your back, with GM Poncho, however unconventional and however much stubborn he could be. But with GM Black Death, you don't know what you're going to get. Especially if this is the same GM Black Death of FBL fame who, let's just say, has had a reputation for overpaying guys that may have not deserved that amount of money mm-hmm. in the first place. Well, and just kind of on the further point as well, too, because you mentioned ownership kind of playing a part in changes as well, too. Mm-hmm. Hector Lopez, who was our great owner over in Mexico City, bless his heart, always has been fair to me, but he's very much a stubborn guy. He's a guy that wants to win at any given point. He feels that it is very much his destiny, if you will, or that's how he told us all about it, that it was his destiny to, you know, have this team achieve greatness, and we finally did it this past season in APL things. But some owners can be very demanding of their players, of their team. And Sir Art Curry has always struck me as the type of owner that has done that, however unconventionally he has. So in ways, like Jim described, the move wasn't that surprising to trade GM Poncho and get good returns for him. But it doesn't do a lot of good for guys who have been there, who got used to the system that GM Poncho had running. So a lot of uncharted waters, a lot of uncertainty, and it can't be good, especially for a guy like Crawford that's just trying to kind of just get back into playing the game.
Yeah. Now, on the flip side, though, where I would agree 100%, you know, hey, the GM changes, that means a big shakeup is coming. But when you look at it, GM Poncho was ready to move on from the head coach, which means a change in philosophy. He was mm-hmm. already gone through a defensive coordinator because of the owner. But yep. really, when you look at it, I heard through the grapevine that the Michigan Monsters of the APL had offered yes. a giant trade package for Stephen Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
So I do heard about GMBD that.
GMBD
well.
Committed to Stephen Crawford. In my opinion, Crawford is going to play out that last 2 years that deal of his, excuse me. And really, that's going to be at his time to decide if he's going to continue to play or be able to continue to play. But I don't think he really has much to worry about. And he's probably not after that, because I hear it was over $10 million in money plus players that would have been offered from Michigan.
I actually have the deal in hands right here with me, Jim.
Look at the new guy. That's what I like here. Take the initiative there, El Model.
But yes, the main part of the issue, trade itself, it would have been Crawford, Elvis Aponte, Bill Peterman, Henry Rios, and Wayne Wempler going to Michigan for their guard and Michael Bryce, their defensive end George Gaskins, the defensive tackle Marcus Russell, and about $5 million in public relations funding going on. And let me just tell you this from experience. I've played against Gaskins. That dude is a beast. 17 sacks last season around, saw him kind of sacking the guy that was, you know, my two understudies, if you will, that just did an amazing job for us in Mexico City after injury kind of struck me down and they picked up range well. But I've seen Gaskins work. I've seen Russell. That duo is incredible, and I think they're going to do great things for Michigan altogether. And Long Beach could have used that defensive presence. I mean, that's something that we need to touch on at one point, is that while their offense still has a lot of key players and there's a couple of gains here and there on defense, overall, that defense still like looks like the kind of defense that will bend and break at times rather than the bend but not break approach.
Yeah. Before we get to the defense, because that's another issue, I kind of, you know, Jim, you brought up that you'd have to change philosophies if you had changed coaches. They still had to change philosophy, or they still ended up changing philosophies with GM Black Death coming to Long Beach replacing Jim Poncho, and it kind of helps Crawford. But at the same time, you spent – you know, the team was built for up-tempo, high-scoring team, and now a couple moves here and there. This is a power-run team. You have Jose Mackey, who had already carried the ball, I believe, close to 350 times last season for 2,000 yards. Who has already probably carried the ball close to 2,000 times in his career. You add Randy Oliver in a trade with Missouri. And you ended up trading Block, who I believe was the better blocking tight end, was a better overall tight end than Herzog. Herzog was more of a passing threat. And we know that offensive line wasn't spectacular at running the ball. It's more of Mackey, and he did add a couple guys here and there. But looking at this offense, and you know now they want to run the ball, what I'm hearing back is that they want to run the ball close to 60% of the time at a high speed. And, you know, fast up-tempo offense. Is that the best move?
Jose Mackey is the most talented running back I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got to watch him. I was on the sideline, but I got to watch him play this year firsthand. I've seen him play in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime you have a running back who's carrying the ball, he had 413 carries last year.
I was even wrong. Wow. I was shortchanging him.
The year before, he had already set the league record at 375.
Mm-hmm.
Over the past 2 years, he has 788 carries. And he's averaging almost 5 yards per carry over those 2 years. It's ridiculous. It 3,756 yards
and
rushing.
He's got no signs of fatigue.
And he, but the thing is, at some point he's going to. And we've seen it with talented running backs. At some point, when they hit that wall due to carry load and workload, it's not a gradual decline. It is a wall.
Yeah,
and that's
cliff.
What you have to worry about. I hate to see it. Jose Mackey's 27 years old. He could have 3 or 4 more years of this in him. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But on average, most running backs, after that many carries, that for that long a period of time, over a 2 or 3 year period, you have to fear that this is the year it starts to fall off. Now, if it doesn't, GM Black Death might ride him again and find out next year it happens, or he might fade mid-season, or, again, he might not. But I think 60% run, if that's the real plan, that's not terrible.
Mm-mm.
I mean, if they were up there in the 80% range, you have to start worrying.
You know more. You know a lot about that.
Yes, and, yes. I can firsthand give you some experience in all things Coach Haas.
Bruin ball?
Yes. And here's the thing.
Yes, Bruin ball. Bruin ball is...
And I got you guys, but one other thing that I want to consider as well, too, is not only the fact that Mackey is, you know, an offensive dynamo just running the ball together, you've got to consider the times, too, that he's actually caught the ball as a checkoff option in and of itself, and that's 57 catches last season, closing in on 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns. You have that added workload.
Touches.
Exactly. That's almost 500 that workload, both on the pass, both on obviously the rushing game, as well as being an option for that receiving game, you're putting a lot of miles into that guy at a far faster pace than you see, you know, 3/4 of the running backs in this league do. So it's at one point or another, you've got to think you have to either ease off the throttle or risk losing the guy either to natural decline at a much faster rate, or God knows what happens, an injury, if just one wrong tackle here and you could see a career easily shelved off for the season or worse.
And the thing with Mackey, well, the thing both with Mackey and Stephen Crawford, you got $31 million between the two of them. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Both guys, well, Crawford is coming off 2 neck injuries and he's over 30. And Jose Mackey has as many carries as a lot of like 34-year-old running backs do. And he's 27. So he's older than 27 in my mind. He's got the carries to prove it. That fall off may happen at some point this year for both guys. Crawford, you don't know. He could be holding on by a thread. And, you know, I've heard reports that his arm strength, because of the neck injuries, is not there anymore. Thankfully, he is a highly intelligent quarterback, and he knows his teammates where he can make those throws, but he won't have the same kind of zips on it. They're going to look a little quackish. But if he goes, you have Keith Barrows to back him up. Long Beach is done. Jose Mackey goes down. Russell Stanford and John Romero. Oh, you know, Stanford, not too bad. I mean, but he's not Jose Mackey. You've kind of put all of your eggs into those two guys financially. And if they go down this year, you're kind of screwed. The bright spot. If they don't go down this year and they go down next year, as you kind of said, Jim, where that could happen. They're both their deals expire next season, where you could ride Jose Mackey for the next 2 years, give him another 500 touches combined, you know, between running the ball and catching, and let him go. Let him leave saying, look, he's going to break down. I'd rather not have him break down on our watch with, you know, costing us money. I think that's in the offensive side. That's good. But Joseph Herzog, he's starting to hit that decline. He's up there in age. He's 30. He's been with the Long Beach Mermen for quite some time. His jersey's probably going to get retired, you know, in Long Beach.
Oh, it has to. I mean, one of the guys who leads the league in reception, mm-hmm. all-time receptions at 536.
Mm-hmm.
One of those guys, he's a legend, especially at the tight end position. I mean, you just don't see that. But, yeah, he's definitely starting to slow down. He's 30 years old, and you know, guys start to drop off, and you don't want to see it. None of us do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they don't want to admit it. But, you know, right now, Herzog is the leading receiver, number two behind him at 518, Armand Block. And then Alberto Kidwell and Jonathan Johnson, both right behind them at 499. So, I mean, that's your top four in receptions. But Herzog now at 30 years old, 7 years in pro football, he had a huge drop-off. You know, 2 years ago, he had 115 catches for 1,200 yards and 12 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
This year, he only had 64 catches, 600 yards, and 5 touchdowns. And you have to factor the Mackey factor in there now.
Mm-hmm. Because,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Jose Mackey showed up, and suddenly the ball was being handed off. And then Brian Owen really didn't have a connection with his tight ends like Stephen Crawford does.
Yep.
So we saw those factors. So it'll be really big to me this year, the deciding factor for this offense. Can Crawford get back on the same page with Herzog while Mackey's still doing his thing? And then where does Martin back fit?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Those catches. So there's a lot. I'm really anxious to see Long Beach get on the field because we know they have talented players, but how do they use them?
Yep.
That's going to be important.
And it feels to me a lot of it too rides on Crawford's own arm. I mean, neck surgeries are a serious business to where you look at our counterpart with the NFL, for example, and a certain famous quarterback over there that's had, what, 3-4 of these now? And, well, his mind is as sharp as a tack. Everything else is not functioning the way it should. And with age, this happens to quarterbacks. Jim and I know that from experience. So,
yeah.
And, of course, the options are there to where Herzog, you get a lot of plays that you can get short gain from it, and Herzog can kind of carry the load a little bit more. But then where does that leave Martin back, who is, you know, a threat just about anywhere that he goes on the field? Can Crawford connect with him? Does he have the arm to connect with him, especially when it matters?
Yeah. It'll be one of the things, like Jim said, you know, the sooner they get on the field in the regular season, the better, because we can see exactly how this offense is going to work, because there's so many ideas of what's going to happen that nobody knows for sure what's going to happen. Let's focus on the defense a little bit, because new GM came in with a new philosophy on offense. Hey, we have the best running back in the league, the best offensive weapon in the league. Let's feature him more. Let's turn this into a power running game, which helps in this division, given last year Oakland just running and literally running through the division, averaging over 200 yards rushing against division foes. So it's a good idea, given that, hey, we see Rapid City's ball hawking secondary. Lincoln's redone their secondary. Let's focus on running, because that was a weak spot in our division last year. Let's improve on that. defensively, Long Beach was one of those teams that Oakland ran through and ran through a big way. There's still holes on that defense that they ran through. They didn't do much to change that. GM Poncho retained Tony Stacy. So GM Black Death has a defensive tackle in the middle to at least one to help in that respect. He signed Dwayne Light, or he got him in Dwayne Light in a trade. That helps as well. Traded away all world defensive end David Seymour.
Then just looking at that, and I kind of shook my head just because Sean of the fact Payton, that,
yeah. Sean Payton and Jose Pruitt both side relief. As did Douglas Barnhart, but then we'll.
But then it's now him. Yeah, we'll get there eventually.
They both side relief because David Seymour, you know, as porous as that defense was, David Seymour constantly was in the backfield.
Yeah, he's one of those building blocks of that team. And while you might look and go, hey, well, you know, Clayton Salmon, he's not a bad addition to the team. He's, you know, considered highly rated. He's a good middle-aged player. David Seymour was one of those guys that was supposed to be a lifetime merman. He's supposed mm-hmm. to be one of those guys you could see his number, him, if not retired.
Him and Stephen Leake. Him and
yes,
Stephen
they
Leake.
They were that be. Young. That were their young building blocks of that team. Stephen Leake, your linebacker, your vocal captain.
Yep.
But then Seymour, your disruptor, the guy who got back there and really just got after the quarterback.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of pressure now on Salmon to get in there and prove –
that he's every bit the caliber.
Yeah, because he has to not only make up and be adequate as an average player, he has to live up to the gap, the shoes he's filling. He's filling a big pair of shoes, and that's a big question mark. I still like that they still have Al Barclay, who's a very underrated linebacker. We saw him take a couple of passes back for touchdowns last season. They acquired Jeffrey Hildebrand, who, you know, or Hildebrand, depending on where you're from. But Jeffrey Hildebrand, he's going to come in. They've got a lot of – not youth, but they don't have an old defense. So there is hope that with Coach Wandy Gutierrez, who came in late last season and did show some improvement, he took that secondary and made them a little better.
Yep.
It's going to be big to see how he does with these linebackers and the rest of the front seven, because with Leitner at corner, I think they're confident. With Luis Paulson and Charles Southern, they know what they've got because they're returning players.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to hope that they can improve more. And it's really – I know that Coach Gutierrez was preaching tackling because one of the biggest things with that secondary, they played great man defense. They played good zone. But when the ball was run, they were missing tackles terribly. And that's why, like, your Oaklands had such success, because they have power runners. They're not just speed guys. They're guys who will get in there, lower the shoulder, and knock you on your backside.
Mm-hmm.
And with these guys who can't tackle, that becomes a problem.
Yeah, so, for example, yeah, it's no, just, oh no, it's kind of just emphasizing about a lot of missed tackles altogether from a lot of mainstays on that defense, some of them that got traded away, some that haven't. But just looking at Seymour and kind of going back to that, 75 tackles with 20 tackles for a loss and 17 sacks among those tackles, five of them being forced fumbles. That's the kind of core player that just, it felt to me that if anything, if you were to trade him, they didn't get enough from San Antonio to do it.
Nope.
Yeah, if you were going to move David Seymour, I would have expected.
I would have expected a Hagen like haul for him, to be honest.
Yeah, he was young. He's still improving. I mean, it's GMBD. You have to give him the benefit of the doubt. One,
he tried.
He's new to the league. Yeah. And he was also trying to improve. He didn't get himself taken advantage of.
Nope.
No,
but you also have to take your hat off to GM Gravedigger, who pulled off this trade, because, and I know we'll get to them when we talk about the division, but I think their progression on defense is better than any team I saw in the offseason. And that's because of deals like this.
Yeah. I think you have to give credit to BD, GMBD Black Death, Mr. Death, if you will, for attempting to fix what happened. But really, though, let's take a look at the whole picture. Tony Stacy re-signed, done before he got there by GM Poncho. Mm-hmm. Dwayne Light, Alfonso Leitner, came here because of the owner's trade. He acquired Jeffrey Hildebrand, traded away David Seymour. That's a minus. You know, he acquired Jason Mason. Good move. But, you know, he also re-signed a lot of guys. There was a lot of free agents. There was room for this defense to get replaced and improved going into free agency.
He did bring in Henry Watts, the rookie center, who I'm just saying, from what I hear in camp, because we didn't talk much about their offensive line, Henry Watts was a get. And you know, and I think we'll look back and we'll start to forgive some of these moves. But you know, with David Seymour, just two years in the league.
Yeah, but did we forgive? And it's again harping on something I was really big on. I know Jim, you were busy being. I did you listen to us at all?
I did.
Thank you.
That's why I'm not going to be on the air with Mr. Roy? Baker. I don't mind him taking my spot. I don't know if we can occupy the same space.
Hey, that's why we're best friends, Jim. You're my best friend.
I got your back.
See? Sorry, Roy. Roy thought he replaced you as both.
Roy thought he replaced you as the number one insider.
Look, I'm not a talent. I'm just the first voice you hear and then the last voice you hear. That's all I am. I'm not the talent. I'm just the first and last voice you hear every time.
You're still more important than producer Bob, though. Sorry, Bob.
Whoa. Don't – Bob, the first
– And the first dagger is thrown.
Wow. He's going to be a problem. This guy is going to be a problem for you. Not cursing. Not like Jimmy. Not like Jimmy problem.
I'm just kidding. It's all in good fun.
You're going to go from El Modelo to the
– El Bleeped One or something like that.
El Dark – El Shade Cloud.
And whenever you go to talk, nobody's going to be able to hear you. We'll have audio problems.
That sounds about right.
But I harped on it a lot last year. Going into the season, GM Poncho didn't really improve the defense. Yeah, but he got Brian Owen. He's got the best backup in Brian Owens. He's got a lot of offense. We'll look back on that and going, you know what? Sure, he didn't fix the defense or he didn't improve on the defense. But, man, nobody's stopping the offense. Well, we found out nobody stopped the offense, but their defense couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah. So a lot of shootouts.
Sure. You know, the drafting of Henry Watts, the drafting of Will Fulcher, you know, the philosophy change on offense, good moves, but it all's for naught because at the end of the day, you want to be better than you were last year. Nobody wants to be worse or the same. And this goes for Long Beach, who 2 years ago won the championship. They want to be back competing for a playoff spot, being a premier team. Their owner is all about appearances, and he wants his franchise to appear as the elite franchise. That defense, at best, is average, in my estimation. Mm-hmm. You know, Steven Leak, he can tackle everything. You can game plan to stay away from Steven Leak. You know, and yes, Alfonso Leitner had an incredible season last year. And should have a very good season this year. But we know Lewis Paulson, Charles Southern, Miguel Tripp. Yes, they're not covering the number one guy anymore. But you look at this, you look at their division. Oakland's got better receivers than they did last year. They go deeper now. Rapid City. Oh, they're going to set things in place. And Lincoln, who we'll get to right after this. Lincoln still has Hector Houser. They got Francisco Zambrano. And they have a quarterback who should be more consistent than Douglas Barnhart. That's going to be a problem because Alfonso Leitner cannot cover everybody. Steven Leak cannot tackle everybody. And we don't know if Clayton Salmon, you know, can swim upstream and get to the quarterback like David Seymour did.
Yeah, it's
definitely
a lot of interest. It will be interesting. As already mentioned, I can't wait to see them getting on the field at this point just to see a lot of these questions getting answered.
Poor Wandy Gutierrez. He's had David Seymour to build a defense around.
He was not happy about that is what I heard from training camp. Like I did hear he was not particularly pleased with that move. And then there's also Sir Curry, who, as you mentioned, appearances are a key for him. He definitely wants to improve on the record last year. He wants to be fighting for a playoff spot. And that game against Alabama is going to be really interesting down the road this season between them.
So before we get to Lincoln, we'll get to Lincoln next. I'm going to ask you guys, we're going to do this for every division and every team. I want one reason why Long Beach will win the Northwest Division. Mike, you first.
Mackey's legs, Mackey's arms, secondary that steps up far more surprisingly than anybody would expect them to.
One
with the linebacker, of course.
I just wanted one.
Well,
I accept Mackey's legs as one because that is a very
fine.
Good...
Yep, let's just go with Mackey's legs in this case. And a reason
give me
that
one, give
lose.
Me one reason why they will not. They will be, let's say, the number one pick in the draft.
Defense
We're not
breaks.
Getting it all, but you are losing it all.
The defense breaks down
all season. All right, Jim. One reason why Long Beach Mermen will be the Northwest Division champions in season 7, and one reason why they will be picking with the first selection in the season 8 amateur draft.
All right, my reason they can win the division is championship experience. They have a championship head coach, championship winning quarterback, championship winning MVP running back, and you know they have been there before. So if they can build on that experience, they can draw from that to get one more run at that glory for these older guys. They've got it. Now, the reason they could be the first pick in the draft is going to be Keith Barrows. You know, they don't have depth behind Stephen Crawford, and if Crawford goes down or if Crawford doesn't have it anymore, like it's been rumored in some circles, then they are going to either have to turn to Barrows or be forced to turn to Barrows because of injury. And I think from that point, you can have Jose Mackey all you want, but if there's no threat of a pass game, even Mackey can't run when there's 10 in the box.
Yep. My one reason why they will, their offensive line is very much improved from last year in a protection sense. Brian Owen and Stephen Crawford both were sacked well above average last season. Improved. You have Will Fulcher and Miguel Alexander both on the outside. Chad Scott coming over in part of that David Seymour trade. Wayne Wampler improved as well. And you have Henry Rios, who's been there before, but you have Henry Watts, who I think will probably be the starting center by midseason. Offensive line strength and improvement is going to be the reason why this team wins the division, the reason why they will pick number one. And it kind of goes in with what you said, Jim. Lack of depth, not just at the quarterback position. They lack depth at wide receiver. If Martin Back goes down, Greg Calkins is their number one receiver. Ugh. Steven Leek goes down, Danny Steinberg. Who's going to tackle everybody? Tony Stacy goes down. David Greer does not look that good. They're running a 3-4 now. So, you know, that's kind of troublesome. But you have Dwayne Light who can step up. Alfonso Leitner goes down. You're now having the same corners you had last season when that was a problem. Richard Hunt goes down. Manuel Novak has to step up. I feel like we've been kind of lucky with the injuries. Oakland fans are now yelling at me, oh, who are you calling lucky? But the league in general has been lucky in terms of injury. I think depth is now going to be a more important part of your, which is always an important part, but it'll be even more important this year. And they don't have the depth mainly because they're giving so much money to 3 or 4 guys on the offense, and you're seeing it on the defense not be there. So those are my reasons. Let's go to Lincoln, GM strike guy, successful first season in Lincoln. An up and down season. They had some wins against good opponents, some losses against some bad opponents. They were in it up until the end. Things didn't fall their way. They were left on the outside looking in on the playoffs. And Tombstone is very happy about that because that would have been Lincoln's spot in the playoffs. Looking at Lincoln, big get in the offseason. While they wanted William Brewster, Giovanni Hill, not that bad of a consolation prize. Especially when this is a team who had William Brewster 2 seasons ago, have MVP numbers, miss out on him, and have Douglas Barnhart be their quarterback, have an up-and-down season. Giovanni Hill coming over from St. Paul, and he's happy about that. He might, you know, sure, he doesn't have DGB and Michael Hodge, but he's got a defense behind him that is good and an offense around him that he can kind of rely on some playmakers like George Pays, like Hector Houser.
Giovanni Hill has to be thrilled that he's going to be handing the ball or throwing the ball to George Page and not, you know, Samuel Seal or Davis. Joe Davis or who they have now, William Swift. Mm-hmm. You know, those are all players that were options if he was still over in St. Paul. But Giovanni Hill, the biggest questions are, one, durability. He had some injury problems early in the season last year. That led to him and Coach Brandon Reno changing up his style from that running mobile quarterback into being more of a pure pocket passer. And we know Giovanni Hill is anything but a pure pocket passer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the big question we're waiting to see from GM Strike Guy, does Giovanni Hill stay developing as a pocket passer, or do they unleash him and give him a chance to be more lethal and more explosive as a playmaker, but risk him being injured? Mm-hmm. Now, they did go out and made sure they moved Barnhart to avoid any starter drama, but they acquired a decent backup quarterback in Alan Ayala. They mm-hmm. also have a third-string quarterback in Vincent Gomez. They are prepared if Hill goes down, and that's why I think they might go ahead and take the chains off of Hill and tell him to be himself again. Because you want the big play. You know, it's risk reward. It's, you know, you're not going to make the big play if you don't try for the big play. And I think that that's what they want out of him. I could be wrong. They gave him a 4-year deal, and you'd hate to lose a guy and completely change his career due to injury and then have to pay him $11 million for the following three seasons. But overall, that's the sense I get. Now, what they do, we're not going to know for another week or so, or at least until the league calendar rolls over and we start the new year. But I know that Giovanni Hill's excited to be there. He's willing to take on either role he's offered. He's not going to have a problem from what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, 2 years ago, he threw for 4,300 yards.
As a backup, as a scrambling, running, dual threat quarterback.
And now he had 14 picks, but he also had 28 touchdowns. Last year, he threw 20 interceptions, only got 8 touchdowns.
Yep.
And just two games difference. And, you know, until last season, he was a perennial 95, 96, all the way into the hundreds passer rating quarterback. He's been a star in the league, not just a good player. And if he can get back to that here in Lincoln, they really ended up getting a diamond in the rough when you think about Giovanni Hill being one of the last quarterbacks signed in free agency.
Mm-hmm. And they got him at a very, very good contract, given that Caleb Smoke, $19 million, William Brewster, $15 million. I mean, you know, he's expensive, you know, but for a guy who's not fully proven. But I mean, we've saw Brewster, he's making $15 million after he's had an up sort of in the middle kind of tenures in the last two seasons.
Yeah. And one last thing before, and I'll stop about Giovanni Hill. One thing to look at, if Giovanni Hill is successful this year and it proves GM Strike, you know, as a genius, because again, if you look at it at that price tag, $11 million, mm-hmm. you're gonna say, wow, he's affordable, he's here long term, great deal. Plus, he would have the satisfaction of saying, we were the reason the price tag went so high on William Brewster, because it was a bidding war between Lincoln and Oakland to sign Brewster right before he inked that deal.
Tombstone, I believe.
Tombstone.
I'm sorry, Tombstone. Last season was. Either way, you know, it's a conference opponent that you're gonna play every year.
Division conference.
That you basically were able to steal millions of dollars from them by making that price tag go up. So that's just another feather in the cap for Lincoln, at least in behind closed doors. They're not gonna come out and say it on the press conference, but behind closed doors, you have to think if Giovanni Hill works out and there's any struggle from Brewster at all, this is a big win for GM Strike, and it's going to give him an extra boost to that reputation.
Yeah. Giovanni Hill, let's just to compare how good he was 2 seasons ago, being in a comfortable dual threat quarterback. You brought up how 4,355 yards. Only quarterback better than him, Stephen Crawford. His completion percentage, 62%, among the top in the league. Quarterback rating, Stephen Crawford only quarterbacks with a higher QB rating last season, or 2 seasons ago. Averaged 8 yards per attempt, 13 yards per completion, touchdown every five out of 100 passes, and was only sacked 2.5 times on dropbacks, which helps him not get sacked.
And when you look at the playoffs, you know, mm-hmm. that 2 years ago, he got St. Paul into the playoffs with an 11-5 record, knocked off the Alabama Nighthawks 31-23, and then lost to the Dragons
from New Jersey, 16-10. You know, it was a dogfight there in the end. But St. Paul, between that defense and what Giovanni Hill was offering, were really good a year before this last season. So if he can bring any of that intangible he has, that big playability, then Lincoln is going to be in a good position to jump back into the playoffs or even the division race, I think. And that's just – it's huge when you find a quarterback like that because they're not everywhere. I know the draft wasn't full of great quarterback prospects this year. There's a few guys people like. Yeah. But it seemed like Giovanni Hill was a complete afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's got to put a chip on his shoulder. And when you get a quarterback with that mindset who has that chip on his shoulder, he wants to prove people wrong, that can really be beneficial for his team.
Yeah. And now he's got Mississippi Slinger. I just wanted to say that. Go ahead.
Slinger was going to be one of the people that I would bring out in the fact that he's done a really good job ever since exiting the league. Minor, embarrassing, really kind of awkward incident aside, he's been a really good developer of quarterbacks so far into this league. He did some decent work with working with what he had with Barnhart last season to kind of help him carry to at least a somewhat average season altogether. Even the backups like Vincent Gomez kind of have developed a little bit under him. I think him working with Giovanni Hill will be a big thing. But what I want to focus on as well, too, is that we talk about Gio Hill and taking, keeping other defenses honest with his legs and whether they go back to that particular style or keep him in the pocket. But you have to think that there's a little bit less for Gio Hill to worry about considering they've got a beast in George Page, who broke out last season in a big way, coming back, you know, still under a long-term deal. There it is, yeah. And, I mean, the promotions for him have been some pretty good stuff altogether. It seems that camp is really happy with the public relations side of things there. And after the season that he had last year, I wouldn't be surprised if we see another one just like it, because he's both a threat running the ball as well as getting it under it's getting passed as well. I think I'm trying to think if it was you, Bruno, or Roy or Jimmy that described him as a poor man's Kurt Robles. Now, Kurt Robles is Kurt Robles, but that's as good of a compliment as you can pay, and we don't mean that in like a bad way by any means.
No,
I think anytime you have a player and Kurt Robles in the same sentence or Jose Mackey, it's a compliment, even if it's meant as an insult.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
George Page comes in, he has a great blend of speed and agility and power and the ability to catch the football. Now, you know, he's not going to line up wide out at receiver like a Cleo Rickard or one of those really, you know, versatile backs, but he is a great all-around featured back. You know, and by having that, Lincoln's not having to go out there and try to run a committee system. They're able to just feed their horse. He had 317 carries last year, 1,547 yards, 13 touchdowns. He doubled his career total from the previous two seasons in 1 year. And I think he showed that even just giving him 20 carries a game, he was getting about 100 yards per game. And he really came out there. And one stat that jumps out to me, only 6 of his 317 carries were for more than 20 yards. But he still averaged 4.9 yards a carry, which means he really is just taking that out every time. He's not your guy who's out there getting you 40 or 2. He's getting you 5 or 6 almost every play.
Yep.
And you got to love it. 61 more catches on top of it for 756 yards. And sure, he dropped some balls. He's a running back. What do you expect? But he had those 5 touchdowns on his receptions. And, you know, when you get 18 total touchdowns out of your running back, you know, really, what more can you ask for?
Mm-hmm. And something that I think will be better explored this season around than it was with Barnhart is the wide receiver core. You obviously have Hector Houser, who's been a consistent force in the league altogether. Maybe not talked among some of the top tier wide receivers all around, but a good presence there, steady, able to make catches, great locker room guy as well too for them. For instance, Umbrano lining up on the other side is a big help as well too, as he's come from a fair amount of experience, including championship experience with Alabama at a certain point.
Not
much
geographical experience though.
Yes,
not much geographical. Welcome everybody to the great state of Lincoln.
That PR is just very unfortunate to say.
That marketing team did so well with George Page.
And they did well with mostly everybody. That was just the one thing that the wheels came off, and I'm sure management is going to have to try and do something for him just to make sure they don't have an aggravated wide receiver throughout the season.
Made to look like an idiot.
Yeah, but one guy that I want to talk about that was brought in kind of under the radar for most people that we saw in training camp was Michael Cox, who's going to be lining up on slot for them. He was did a lot of APL work. I'm trying to remember if it was with Winnipeg, I believe, the Polar Bears. And just, you know, he's not going to be your superstar by any means, but as a slot receiver, he is going to keep the secondaries a lot more careful because you can't just worry about Hauser and Zambrano in this case anymore with a guy like him there. And I'll let did one of you guys kind of take over from here.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, and it helps because last season, Douglas Barnhart completing less than 60%, throwing 18 interceptions versus 17 touchdowns. You know, we already covered it as far as him Giovanni being an improvement over Barnhart just from the quarterback position. But now you give Hector Hauser and Francisco Zambrano a quarterback who is a little bit more accurate, who can find, who makes bigger plays and is more consistent because, you know, Barnhart could, you didn't know what kind of Barnhart. It wasn't like Barnhart had a stretch of games where he was bad. He had some games where he was really good. Then he had games where he was horrendous. And then he'd have a normal game and then a good game, then a horrendous game, then a normal game. You never knew what you were getting. And as a, you know, for wide receivers like Hector Hauser, rhythm, timing, it's consistency is key. DJ Khaled, the key to his success is consistency for Hector Hauser. And, you know, and even George Pace. George Pace was your second leading receiver. Now, you know, maybe Zambrano, you know, jumps up a little bit. You have Michael Cox. They run a little bit more spread. You spread out teams. You know, you give Page more room in the backfield because now you have a quarterback who you have to, you have to believe he's going to find the weakness in your defense, so you have to play at peak when you're in coverage, letting George Page run a little bit more. You know, maybe Page doesn't get 300 carries again. Maybe you can kind of consider, I mean, 300 carries, you know, with the 61 catches, and that's not even counting plays that got called back on penalties. So we're talking, this guy had maybe close to 400 attempts. We just talked about how that's not good for Mackey. That's not good for George Page, regardless of him being younger than Mackey. It's not good for a guy to have 400 touches. But, you know, if he can do it, man, he's the same age as Mackey. He's 27.
Yeah, just a little younger.
He's younger.
Yeah, and lower miles.
Lower miles.
When you think he originally was backing up Christopher Marchand, he was, you know, playing timeshare.
Who's got a timeshare of his own now in Cabo, Christopher Marchand does. But yeah, I mean, and here's my concern though. Okay, that offensive line did not get better.
No.
They even declined a little bit. You got some older guys there. With a guy like Giovanni Hill, if you're going to make him a pocket passer, this offensive line is not good. If you're going to make him a scrambling threat, dual threat running back, it's a little bit better. But still, at the same time, your quarterback's going to get hit regardless. So it's basically, hey, do you want your quarterback to be comfortable in the way he's getting hit? Or do you want him to, you know, get hit on the blind side without expecting it?
And I really like the addition of Philip Woodson right there in the middle at the center spot. But really, that's going to be a run move. That's not as much of a pass protection type move. What I look at, though, is with, I believe, who are they starting this year? They're going to be starting Reeves and Franz, I think.
Yep.
The tackles were the ones who had the biggest drop-off, I feel.
Yeah, and they're really an older bunch. They have the 23-year-old rookie Joe Carrico, who's definitely not ready to be out there as a starter by any means, especially as a pass protector. But they lack a real pass-protecting tackle. Their tackles are set up to run, and that's scary. None of them really stand out to me as guys who are going to really get up there and fight you with their hands and keep you off the quarterback. A team with a good pass rush is going to really get back there. If Waylon Hagen comes to town, I would consider playing Alan Ayala or doing something, because not only does Hagen have the motivation from last year,
he's still
he also just likes to hit people.
Now, at guard, I like what they have in Christopher Fernandez, and I believe he's wearing the captaincy again this year. You know, he's 32 years old, though. He's getting older. He's going to start to drop off. Hugh Ulrich is still a strong pass and run blocker, but none, not a single offensive lineman on that team is a better pass blocker than they are a run blocker.
That's probably.
They want to look out there. They want to probably try to get out there and scout some pass protectors or look into free agency next season. But either way, either by the draft or by free agency, if they're going to be throwing the ball with Giovanni Hill, they need to find a way to protect him.
Yeah, and the way this team's salaries in, and they're max, you know, and there are now unlimited trades you can make prior to the trade deadline, but when you have no money, that makes it tough. You need, that means you have to find it to match up, and if you're, you know, and if you need that guy, if you're a GM strike guy and you say, this is a year that we can win it, and what we need is a tackle to protect his blind side. There's a guy available, but it's going to cost me Francisco Zambrano, or it's going to cost me Brandon Loge, or it's going to cost me Quinn Rodriguez. That's going to be troublesome, because then you now have to weigh, is that as important as what this guy's been doing for our team?
Exactly. And really, when you look at their roster, outside of veterans who would either want to be re-signed or might be retiring, there's not a lot of money coming off the books. Hector Hauser is, you know, when I talk about the top four wide receivers as far as career catches go, he's number five. He's got 482 catches. It's only his seventh year in the league. He's at 30 years old. He's still got some years left in the tank.
Yep.
But he's on the final year of a $7 million per year deal with a pretty large advertising budget from the PR side of things. But he means a lot to this city. He means a lot to the team. Can they afford to let him walk? You know, hopefully he give you some kind of hometown discount or maybe even sustain at the same price.
Yep.
But he also could command big money if a team thinks, hey, we're a one veteran wide receiver away. Let's make the deal. And that's when that hometown discount goes out the window. Hometown is always good until somebody else goes, wait, we'll give you this much more.
Yeah.
And so the money that's going to come to upgrade the offensive line, where does it come from? And that's just something you have to deal with. I mean,
and Hector Hauser, with Eugene Reynolds re-signing prior to training camp with Pearl Harbor, Hector Hauser's the top wide receiver going into free agency right now. You have your Kevin Keyes and Terrell Pons. You don't really have – the other big name is David Beasley. That's your only – and Michael Griswold. Only – those are your three top receiving free agents. Hector Hauser is going to command money from anybody who feels that they need a Hector Hauser. Because of the three of them, I'd rather have Hector Hauser over Michael Griswold and David Beasley.
Of course.
I mean, like you said, top five catches in league history. Who doesn't want that guy? But let's look at the defense. Again, like Long Beach, defense was an issue for this team, especially when James Hill broke his neck. They lost him up the middle. He's good to go. My source within the Lincoln organization tells me James Hill made a full recovery, rehabbed on schedule. Looks like he can make it for week one, whether it's in a small role or, you know, your standard starting role. It's not going to be back full speed like he was. He was playing well, but it's good to see him back.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, James Hill, you hate to see that happen to anybody. But, you know, Hill was a really hot prospect coming into the draft. He slipped on the draft board a little bit. But then when he started to go right there when he went at 16 as the last pick in the first round, there were several teams making calls for that pick. I know Oakland was very interested in bringing James Hill in. I know a few other teams were looking at him as well. And he played pretty well. You know, at nose tackle, it's hard to rack up stats. So when you look at the paper and go, oh, 14 tackles, 3 sacks – but that's not really what happens. You look at what other teams are doing against him. You look at how he's disrupting, and he's a great leader, even as a 24-year-old, at the time, 23-year-old rookie. He is a leader on the field. He's a leader in the locker room, and that resonated. When he went down with that injury, it really shook that defense up, and you saw it as it went. Later in the season, they really started to kind of drop off as we got deeper in, and that's one of those things that comes back to haunt you. Now, with Hill back, they're going to – I mean, I think from what I'm hearing, they should be able to just go ahead and put him right back in there and start him.
just not expect him to be doing amazing things.
Yep.
But if he can stay healthy, he adds a great centerpiece to that front three on the 3-4 defense they run. As a nose tackle, he has uncharacteristic speed, and he's a great tackler. So he can even, you know, there's not many nose tackles, maybe since the days of Warren Sapp, that really from the, you know, from that position got back there and chased the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And Hill is one of those few guys who can do it. He's a great weapon. He's in a great position to get some attention for that defense. You know, he's to his left and right. He's going to have guys that make it impossible, really, to double team him with William Marquez and Wilhelm Hammer. I really like what they've done there. I think that front three has potential. Yeah, sure, Marquez is starting to come down.
And still.
Hammer's very undersized. That's the one question with Hammer. 5'11", 253 on the defensive line on a 3-4. Well, typically you're looking at 300-pound guys. You're looking at three defensive tackles usually on a 3-4 defense. They're really going kind of a 4-3 front without an extra defensive tackle. So how does that play? Well, they don't have a single 300-pounder in the starting lineup. But I think with that speed, they could bring a new dimension, a new dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can get to the quarterback, that's...
They do actually have one in Timothy Kim, who's at about 302, so just right at that mark.
I was going to say, Is Kim starting, though? No.
I believe they're mentioning that they're going with a 4-3 offense since they brought in the younger Campbell to be their defensive coordinator.
I saw them working out the 3-4 in the training camp. That was the thing of Hill being – that was the strange thing to me. I said, you got Timothy Kim who came in and played well and all. But, I mean, worse comes worse. If they do run the 3-4, the kind of package that I could see them going is – you know, coming out of college, James Hill was a very tweener between defensive tackle, defensive end. Mm-hmm. He could have gone either way. Lincoln went with a defensive tackle. But you could put him at defensive end. You bring Timothy Kim as your nose tackle. Wilhelm goes to the bench. You're 3-4s. Now, look, it looks big. You got 6'3", 272 James Hill, and William Marquez, 6'7", 295 on the outside or on the ends. And Timothy Kim on nose tackle, 302, 6'7", those are some big boys. Much bigger than Wilhelm. Mm-hmm.
We could just be looking at some typos here.
Yeah. But I mean, well,
yeah, either way, though, that could be good stuff. Yeah, I remember them bringing in Campbell with the decision to change up their defense because Roman Beast
departed.
So I'm thinking we're probably just getting some bad info out there, but...
It could have just been one of the package that you know somebody brought up and they wanted to just tell me. But hey, I think their defensive line is good. Linebacking core took a hit. Gary Tejada was sent to Winnipeg, the Polar Bears.
To get Michael Cox. Yep. And then
they were able to keep Quinn Rodriguez, but man, Quinn Rodriguez $7.5 million. I think that was a no, you're not leaving. Here's the dump truck full of money.
Beep, back up the dump truck.
Which kind of, you know, doesn't necessarily hurt because Quinn Rodriguez, 27, 4 years pro, you know, he's going to be good. He's going to probably get better. And you have William, you know, Saunders, who's 30 years old. He's probably going to, within the next 2 years when his contract comes up, they're going to move on from him. Quinn Rodriguez steps up as the lead linebacker. Kelly Luttrell, again, solid. But John Anders... It's a good thing they're running a 4-3, not a 3-4.
Yeah, and that's – I definitely feel the Andra signing in this case because they considered that they're running a 4-3 this time around rather than the 3-4. Mm-hmm. That's why I feel they've probably felt more comfortable with dropping Tejada to Winnipeg in order to get Cox and then more comfortable enough with just grabbing Andras late in the draft and just signing him for that 1 year and then thinking possibly about – maybe an extra body in that position next season, even. But I still think that Saunders still offers a lot of leadership, and he's still – the drop-off hasn't been too big with him. He's still able to go. Rodriguez, I think, is going to be the leader of that front seven in another year or so as a whole. He's definitely got the tools to do it. And Kelly Luttrell, I feel, is rather underrated for his contract, the way it is right now. He could definitely still improve, and he's still only 25 as well. So – linebackers wise, I think they're okay. Could definitely use somebody a little bit better as the backup in case one of them goes down to injury, but
it's really hard with the way the salary is these days, though, to really pay that depth. And one of the big things, you know, whether you blame GMs, you blame agents, you blame the draft, there's always going to be somebody to blame. But you have to look at it, and the players are getting the money they feel like they deserve.
Yep.
The teams are paying the money they feel like they are comfortable paying.
Oh, and then there's deals out there that the GM and the team benefit all the much. We're going to get to one in not too far down this episode. But you can't have – you're going to have some overpays, Quinn Rodriguez, but they're overpays because he's worth that much to the team to keep him.
Exactly.
You're not getting – like Christopher Marchand, he's an overpayment because he's old. There's no other – you know, that was just a bad deal.
Yeah, that was a deal that – one of those times that you give a guy too long-term of a deal, and then you're stuck with it. And they had to pay that price. It wasn't even their fault.
No.
You know, that deal happened way before any of us were covering the High-Impact Football League.
Yeah.
But – and there it is. But, I mean, they've got some good deals out there too, team-friendly deals. Yeah. And it seems like
we might be talking about Michael Cox making $3.5 million as a slot guy. I mean, look at Wilbur Slaughter two seasons ago, and that's another aspect we didn't bring up. You know, Giovanni Hill was fantastic with Wilbur Slaughter in the slot. Michael Cox in the slot.
That could be a huge deal.
We might be looking at $3.5 million going. That's too low for Michael Cox.
I could see Cox being that Wes Welker type player who is really going to thrive with this system, because we know Giovanni Hill loves to throw to the slot. And if they can really get some production out of Cox there and he can flash that speed that made him so lethal in the American Premier League, this offense could go from, hey, at least they have a great running back to offset their trouble, to, wow, they are one of the greatest shows on turf out there. And you have to think about that. They have the potential to really blossom and explode. And that's what I like. Now, if we go, are we going to go into their why they could win the division?
Because if that's the case,
what I'm going to tell you, the reason they can win the division is, you know, we talk about the offense, and I'm sure somebody will take that. I'm going to say because of that pass rush, because of the potential with Hill, Marquez, and Hammer, what I see there is Kim eats up space, Hill penetrates up the middle, and then Marquez and Hammer are the ones that when that quarterback gets flushed out of the pocket – right into the face of one of those defensive ends. We know Marquez can do it. We've seen him do it for years. Hammer is supposed to be a small version if he can achieve his potential and overcome the size trouble. And I think if they can get that pass rush working, they can have the one defense that creates enough havoc back there to slow down these high power offenses.
Not just that, but also considering the secondary they aren't slouches there either, forcing QBs into bad throws by having that pass rush is going to do them wonders.
Yeah. I like what they did by bringing in Foles from the APL. I think he's going to be a really good addition back there at free safety. And now the reason they could end up losing the division.
And picking number one.
The reason they could pick number one and lose the division would come back to their offensive line. Because we've already talked about it. If they can't protect Giovanni Hill, he's going to be scrambling way more than he wants. That's going to lead to injuries. And the next thing you know, it becomes just like in Long Beach, it just becomes, hey, we have to feed Paige. Uh-oh, they know it's coming.
Yep.
And that's no good.
El Model, your one reason why Lincoln will win the Northwest and your one reason why Lincoln will be the first one on the clock.
Reasons why they'll be the first one on the clock, same as Jim, actually, just that. The offensive line basically just breaking down and not being able to protect the quarterback, especially in crucial situations where, say, they're down by three, less than 2 minutes left on the clock, and they got to drive down the field. But instead of getting big plays, Giovanni Hill is getting sacked two or three times. For a reason why they win the division in and of itself, if they get that offense going between Hill being the dual threat, George Page doing George Page things, and they get those first three receivers going, man, oh man, even with a good defense, if that offense does get clicking, it could mean some big trouble for other teams in the league.
All right. My one reason why they will win the division is because last year they were in a playoff spot with an inconsistent quarterback, inconsistent defense. I think now you have a cohesive defense where the head coach and the defensive coordinator same ideals when it comes to schemes. Offense, you have more consistency. Lincoln will be a more consistent team, and therefore they win the division. Why they won't, though, how good are their coordinators? You know, we know Michael Campbell. I mean, he's a good head coach. He led this team. He's on a one-year deal, by the way. So how much of this is him thinking, well, am I going to be here next year or am I not? There might be some thinking there. And Tom Cobb, not only that, where he's got to worry about, you know, his security going into next season, but is Anton Cobb that good of a coach? I mean, no. I mean, I don't believe he was – I don't believe – he was offensive coordinator when Brewster was there.
Yes. Yes, he was. He was brought in the year in which Brewster took over the reins as starting QB in season five. However, he's always been sort of known as a down the middle to below average offensive coordinator.
And then this goes into this. Why didn't Douglas Barnhart might not have the same skill sets as Brewster, but why was he so inconsistent? And Benny Campbell, is he as good as his dad? Are we just looking at a guy who got a job because his last name's Campbell? You know, I mean, we saw him last year in Pearl Harbor, and Pearl Harbor had the worst defense in the league history, topping the previous league history set by Pearl Harbor the year before. So the worst defense got even worse. How good is Benny Campbell? Yes, we're going to have a more consistent in theory, in practices, in schemes. But is he going to call the right kind of defenses when they need to get called? Is he going to have the right personnel when they need to? Yes, the secondary looks as good or better than it was last year. But is he going to call the right coverage? Does Benny Campbell have the awareness to call a defense? That's why that will be the reason why they will be picking number one next year. Next one, Rapid City, the one of two expansion teams last year to make the playoffs, didn't come out of nowhere to some people, myself and Roy Baker, called Rapid City being the best
expansion
team, given and while they weren't record wise they weren't, but given the fact that they played in the West and didn't get to play Missouri, no offense, Jim. St. Paul, an Alabama team that was a little weird and iffy, Orlando, and Music City in New Jersey, and then Atlanta played more of the Southwest. They've had a tougher schedule and went 9-7, made the playoffs. I thought Rapid City was the best expansion team last year, and they got better.
Two words: scorched earth.
That's a pretty good description of the offense right now. And I know we're always going with offense, but
Somehow got more terrifying this season compared to last year.
Offense is king. I mean, we talk about it's offense was king last season because all these teams had offense and the one team that had a defense won the division, but they didn't win it until week 16. Partly due to injury, but partly because their games, I think their point differential was only slightly above, whereas Rapid City blew people out. Lincoln would blow people out when they won, and Long Beach would put up a lot of points and then lose by even more, but still put up points. Offense reigns, and I don't think there's a more offensive team. There is not a more Ricky Gervais team than Rapid City Inferno.
I mean, you just look at the names. Jose Pruitt, Jeremy Martin, John Brogan, Eric Ashworth, the rookie, who I think is going to do big things, Clint Dickey, Joseph Dobbins, Ralph Brown. That's a lot of skill position players.
From James Van Driver.
Yeah, James Van Driver, the corner-turned-wide receiver slash kick-return specialist, from what I'm assuming. But I look at this team, and those other guys, those are all top-tier start-on-most-teams-in-the-league players. Jose Pruitt came back from the APL last year, was in the expansion draft, was questioned how he would do because he was a little inconsistent in Pearl Harbor before he was moved, but he came in and played some good football. Jeremy Martin, Rookie of the Year, and even a very dark horse type MVP caliber player, he's one of those do-it-all type running backs. That's why he went number one overall. And how about the contribution of John Brogan? You know, they named him captain.
Yeah.
As a backup for a reason. He contributed touchdowns and veteran leadership and experience to be a positive influence on Jeremy Martin.
Yep.
That's a lot of offense. Now, I know the question, are there enough balls to go around on this team? How do you distribute the football to that many players? And the thing is, with that, they run one of the fastest-paced offenses in the league. The only other teams that really go as fast as them is a competition between the DC Cobras and the Las Vegas Scorpions. And you have to wonder which one's more successful. Now, sure, DC won the championship, but they also had years of being in that system.
Yep.
That was year one here in Rapid City.
Over a thousand registered plays by this team. Insanity. Over 502 passing attempts by Jose Pruitt, 364 attempts by Martin. You had Brogan have 71 runs. Jose Pruitt had 80 rushing attempts. And then a bunch of little less than double-digit runs by other guys. But that's insane. 1,000 plays.
And they're just going to try to go faster this year. They made some upgrades. They brought – I thought bringing in Ralph Brown was an amazing move for a guy who was pretty coveted by teams like New Jersey, Alabama, Long Beach. Those teams that have won titles or competed for titles wanted him. Mm-hmm. And when you win out for a player like that and you take him from teams that are in title contention, not only does it say a lot about the player you got, but also it says a lot about what the players think of your team.
Mm-hmm.
Players like this fast pace. They like this potent offense. They like scoring touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, the thing is, how is Ralph Brown going to react if he is the third or fourth option on most plays?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get his touchdowns. Does he start to regret it? He's on a 5-year, $7 million deal.
Yeah.
You know, you have some room there. The biggest question, Douglas Barnhart. We're already hearing rumbles that he wants to start.
You heard a rumble? I heard more than a rumble. Yeah, I heard a proclamation that he wants out.
Yeah, Douglas Barnhart wants a starting job or he wants a new team. And it might be the APL for him because I don't know a lot of teams that are looking to get a starter right here before preseason. Or there could be an injury in preseason and Barnhart becomes a commodity. But either way, the trade for Douglas Barnhart was a head-scratcher. You know, you're adding – sure, it's a one-year deal. It's $6.5 million. It's insurance if Pruitt goes down because they're only carrying one extra quarterback. Mm-hmm. But I just question that. You know, GM Gates was voted the GM of the year last season, and rightfully so. Expansion team makes the playoffs. Was an amazing talent. But this was the first move he's made that I really said, whoa, why did you do that? Mm-hmm. And we'll see how that goes.
And believe me, I've got a juicy source on that, actually, that was kind of inside talks between Gates and Strike Guy. The whole concept was in perspective that they needed to move Ed Wagner to come into cap, even out the cap on their side of things, which they did between that and the move for one of their linebackers. I believe they sent Zepeda over to Atlanta, something like that. But those two moves were what they needed to do in order to get things even that on the cap side and give away, basically get rid of Wagner altogether to get the numbers somehow evened up. And my source says that, they may not be as confident in Jose Pruitt as they may claim to be.
Ooh.
Hence why the possibility of Barnhart. Now, don't get me wrong, these are just sources. I can't say for sure.
How does the new guy get these sources?
Look,
I am a quarterback after all.
Jim, I guarantee you this is why, all right? In a totally hetero way.
Of course.
El Model looks like a El Model. He's
all right, we need to put up a poll. My buddy Dan Levitard does this every day.
Okay.
We need to put up a poll. Jim Zebo, Mike Martell, who's the better look?
Jim, how conceited of you. I like this new Jim. Wow, you've really changed since you've been to Missouri.
Prison time in Missouri at the backup quarterback in the GM Gooch administration will change a man.
Okay.
And let me tell you, I have been in talks with a few of our network affiliates and a few of our coworkers to do a sit-down and a tell-all of what I saw.
Man.
And the things that are going on in Missouri.
I'm calling GM for the interview.
We can possibly do it. Yeah. But I know that GM Bone, the new GM there, probably doesn't want this getting out there. He doesn't want it to affect his team's morale. I understand.
But screw him. I want my ratings, damn it.
We'll just see. I have been on the private. I don't want to know. So.
I do have an idea. You could just always film it during the season, wait until the end of the season, and then release it where it's less of a distraction. Nah, and I am willing to shake on that bet, by the way, Ziva, whether it be for like sodas or something like that. I mean, whatever works for you, man.
We'll find out. We'll figure out an actual wager, but we'll put it up. We've got some brand new ESPN headshots made, ready to go.
I'm just saying, all right, look, this guy is a good looking guy. He's gorgeous. This guy is Prince Pretty. Okay, he probably schmoozed
have a selfie stick on you right now, don't you?
No, unfortunately, I didn't get as much with that generation in regards to it. But I've had plenty of guys try to break my face in the football field before because of it. So, I mean, there is that.
He probably seduced the PR lady to give him all give the voicemails, all the call records. I'm not blaming you if you did that. Good job by you. I'm not that good looking. If I was as good looking as you, I would definitely use that to my advantage. I look like your normal schmuck. And that's why I'm not the talent. I'm just the first and last voice you hear on Hiffle Insiders.
Yeah, no implications here. I will not betray my sources by any means, but it is a source, and it does make me really interested in regards of how they view this whole quarterbacking situation. Because, yes, I understand depth in case an injury happens to Pruitt, but if confidence is an issue, I mean, you not only have to worry about your backup wanting out in this case, you have to worry about your starter kind of going, what's going on here?
Yeah. Jim, now you've listened to every Hiffle. And I imagine, Mike, have you listened? I know you were APL. I don't know what the APL, the Hiffle Insiders version of the APL is. Whatever it is, I apologize to that guy, but he's not as good as me. I'm good. But we talked about Sean Doe being part of 3D and their receivers being amazing. Sean Doe retired. Understandable. Still, Sean Doe was supposed to be the third head in that three-headed monster receiving. Sean Doe, anybody off the top of their head without looking at anything know what his stats were at the end of the season? If your answer is not good, you're pretty good. 15 catches for 172 yards and a touchdown with four drops.
I was going to say measly, but
no, measly's not. He had less. He had half as many receptions as both tight ends.
Yeah, that's
this GM Gates, GM of the year for a reason. GM Gates made. You said, Jim, that the Douglas Barnhart one made you scratch your head. Ralph Brown made me scratch my head. Because you went and drafted Eric Ashworth, who you felt, because you drafted him as high as you did, you felt would be a contributing factor. Just look at your stats. You know your tight ends got involved. 39 catches for Richard Lusk, 35 for Henry Mullins, over 70 catches for the two of them. Your tight ends were your second leading receivers behind Dobbins at 81. And Clint Dickey didn't get going until later half of the season. If you would have had Clint Dickey the way he was all season, I don't even think you get that out of your tight ends. And then Jeremy Martin, 800 yards on 53 catches. This is going to be a problem, so long as everybody's healthy. If one of the other guys goes down, it's fine.
Here's the interesting thing for me. I'm surprised that they're actually still putting Mullins to start at tight end rather than Ashworth, especially considering Ashworth not only has the longer deal now, but he also has the promotion behind him while Mullins is on an expiring.
Also bigger, 6'8", 255.
6'8", he's huge.
Tall man, he's bigger than he's bigger than not one, not two, but every offensive lineman. That boy out wide.
Well, the thing is, I heard through my sources during the draft process, there was a sit-down interview between Ashworth and GM Gates, and that's where they got a feeling out for him. And the big thing that came out of it was he had a little bit of an attitude. Now, maybe they're sitting on the bench to hopefully humble him a little bit. That kind of thing could backfire. You never know. Yeah. But all in all, when you look at it, he is a big potential. He's one of those guys that can revolutionize that position. We've seen amazing pass-catching tight ends. But if he can block as well as some of these guys can catch and still provide that explosion as a receiver, it's still just a matter of time before he's in there as a starter.
I still think that there's like Herzog-like qualities on him. Young Herzog, like qualities of him in perspective, that somebody that can catch the ball just anywhere you put it for him. That's a guy that I would have loved to have grown to during my years. Like a 6'8" target that can go for the vertical that he had.
He makes bad passes touchdowns.
Yep.
That's the kind of player he is. And I think if either of us had him, we could still be in the league, if not
pretty much just
between
solid
your injury
connection.
And, you know, Missouri for me.
Missouri. Just a complete disdain for Missouri for the 1 year in which they held Zeebo down. Hashtag free Zeebo.
Can't believe Missouri. This offensive line is just good. I don't think we can really – there's not much else you can go to describe this offensive line. They're good. Very good. The defense, though. Rapid City was the only defense worse than Rapid City was Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about how they got gutted up the middle running game. I think they averaged close to 175 yards per game rushing. You know, and it does. I will put an asterisk on it because they did face George Page, the Oakland running game, and Jose Mackey in five games. They're going to get sliced regardless.
It's a brutal division to be playing run defense in.
But still, you see this. You know, you look at you in this. It's very GM Poncho like. Let's focus on improving the offense. That was our best part. Let's make our strength even stronger.
And Bruno,
good.
No, my apologies, but there's an elephant in this room, and we just need to get rid of it. Personally, just
get it
out. Let it out there.
Too small of a room.
How in the world did Lewis Brown not get signed to a
long-term deal? Oh, I was
getting
that. I'm so waiting for that.
How in the world after last season?
I don't understand. This is the ultimate team-friendly deal. Hey, I'm going to set a record for getting interceptions and being a shutdown corner.
How did Luis Brown not step forward and say, hey, I want a new contract? We've all been there. I know, Bruno, you haven't been on the field, but you've been around the league enough to know.
I do the ESPN. When I heard you were coming back, I said I want more money.
When you want your money, you have to go get your money.
I gotta go get money. Go keep checking them. In a league where Christopher Marchand made more than enough money for him and Luis Brown.
Yep.
They should have switched salaries. I know that's not legal, but they should have done it anyways.
Trade contracts between teams?
Yeah. Lewis Brown gets.
We want to keep the player. We're going to trade the contract.
Yeah. Lewis Brown should be making that kind of money. He's record-setting season. The reason why their defense wasn't as bad because they created chaos in the defensive backfield. And this guy, who's not even the number one guy, he's not QB1. So now, after that kind of season, you kind of look at it and go, if he was so good, why is he not on the number one guy? So now, not only do you not pay the guy enough, now the perception around the league is you don't believe he's your best corner.
And let's not forget the fact this is his last year. And if he plays anywhere near as good as he did last season, even with the distractions, I mean...
I don't even. If I'm Lewis Brown, I said you didn't want to sign me when it was convenient for you.
Exactly.
I don't want you to sign me when I'm about to go set another. I'm going to go break my own record. Sure, Lewis Brown is 31 years old, and we've talked about some old guys. I'm not saying he's going to go make Alfred Glass money, not even Theodore Schumacher money.
But he'll make.
He can go make
a decent amount.
He deserves to be offered
5 or 6. Is at least what he should be getting next in his next contract for 2 to 3 years from a team.
The same contract that they've given Mario Cavanaugh, for example, is what I would see Lewis Brown maxing out at.
The same contract they gave Ralph Brown, I would have given Lewis Brown. They gave the wrong Brown the wrong contract. Let's address the elephant. I was going to get to this. I knew the elephant was in the room. I didn't want to pay attention. I'm scared of elephants. But your defense, which is a nickel defense, okay? We saw were they running the nickel last year? I could have sworn they ran a 4-3.
They ran a hybrid. They run a little bit of both. The big thing they have coach Randy Barber. He's a DB guy. And while I think they're listing it up as a nickel now, it's just that they are building the team for that type of system. You know, they went out and drafted Jason Webb, very athletic, very speedy linebacker. And it's with the intention of getting that nickel defense into, you know, the system. They want to kind of build their defense based around the model set in New Jersey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which we saw. It's great. Until people go, hey, they don't have a linebacker on the field. They have one less linebacker on the field. Let's run the ball. And like we said, sure, they don't have to face Jeremy Martin, but they have to face Jose Mackey twice. They have to face George Page twice. They have to play Christopher Allen, Cleo Rickard, and now John Payton, which Cleo Rickard and Christopher Allen twice. Six games against rushers who had 1,500 yards, or in Oakland's case, combined 1,500 yards.
This is a division of rushers.
Or 17. I'm doing my math wrong. 17. At least 1,700 yards.
But in this division, rushers are a big thing, and while I do think that they have bringing in Kavanaugh was a decent, though he's coming off of injury on his end of things from Alabama, that having Kavanaugh and then even guys like Pierce, Hines, and Garrett, they aren't bad defensive.
Pierce is not good. Neither is Hines. No, I know what you're trying to do here. You're trying to sugarcoat it. Look, Rook. I know you're a vet on the field. And you're used to boosting up guys who stink, but here on the Hitful Insiders, somebody stinks. They don't just stink. They stink. You get some guttural voice in there. They stink.
I'll keep that in mind.
They stink. I don't care.
Guys, just to break in real quick, I just got a text from a friend in the Rapid City area.
Yep.
And he was over there at training camp, and looks like the report coming out while we were both all wrong that Eric Ashworth is the starting.
Oh, wow. End.
Okay.
Well, that's our bad.
The big news I'm getting, though, is that I just see that in training camp, Eric Ashworth has sprained his wrist and is likely to miss the preseason.
That's not good.
So they're going to be having to go in cold with either Mullins, and they're going to have to go with Mullins in preseason. But do you stick out your rookie second round pick right into the fire week one with no preseason?
No.
Or are you going to have to ease him in now? Because
you ease that.
Six foot eight, 255. His hands are freakishly large. He could play basketball. You know, he's got that LeBron build, but he's not going to be ready now. You have to look at it. You know, one of the knocks on him is he's so big and cumbersome, he's going to have to learn the position in the pro game, and he had to get his endurance. He had to get his conditioning built up. This is a big setback for him.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. Joel Pierce, he's young, 27 years old. I don't buy it. I believe he was on the team last year. He got a little bit better, but that was a defense that was horrendous in terms of run defense. And really wasn't that good against pass defense. They just caused turnovers. You know, which you can do, but if other leagues have shown us anything, you can't. Turnovers are not something that you can consistently rely on, you know, because eventually the turnovers are what's the word, Jim? My words are terrible. This, like I said, I'm not the star. I can't be the star if I can't come up with it. Unsustainable. That's the word.
Yes.
Their turnover success is unsustainable. And it's not just the success they had. Their differential is unsustainable. 44 takeaways, 44 interceptions, and then a couple more fumble recoveries. 15 interceptions, and I think one fumble between their running game. One fumble lost. Just that's unsustainable. Six fumbles lost.
Either way, I think
that's unsustainable.
And I definitely agree with that, and I feel a big part of it as well. For anybody else out there who does follow the HIFL but may not kind of think of this concept as, you know, a little weird. Think about it from other sports. Like, say, for example, you take hockey, where you have a team that may be good at scoring a lot of goals, Their defense is very shaky, but they have a hot goaltender that they can ride basically every single night to like a playoff spot. That kind of success, short term, yes, it will give you some results, but in the long term, it's not gonna the same. You can't go to the well too many times before you run out dry. Or
yeah, I just
if that makes any sense. Yeah,
32 interceptions, 11 forced fumbles. It's unsustainable. You can't. You know. Unlike Orlando, Orlando, very similar season. Orlando went and improved their defense. Rapid City, I don't feel, did that. You know, yes, on the edge they did, incredibly, with getting Mario Cavanaugh, who's had 7 sacks in 2 games. And Wesley Gary is no slouch himself. But how good is Mario Cavanaugh and Garrett against setting the edge when it comes to, you know, running run defense? And because it's a two-way, sure, you can get up, but if you can't set the edge and force the run back inside to your linebackers, who aren't that great in the first place, but they're still there, you know, mm-hmm. what's good all that money if people are just going to run the ball against you?
Now tell me, Bruno, would you say that is the one reason why they will be picking number one for the second time in 3 seasons?
Yes, that is why they will be picking number one this season. Next season, next draft, they'll be on the clock first because they GM Poncho'd it. That's how they improve. They focus on improving their strength and not improving their defense enough. And they felt that they could sustain something that couldn't. GM Poncho with Long Beach thought that bend but don't break defense would be the staple. Hey, we're going to bend, but we're not going to let you score. They broke week one and they never recovered. If Rapid City does not sustain their turnover success, which I feel is going to happen. They are going to not have 32 interceptions because teams are going to be wise. Hey, I don't care what we normally do. We're going to run the ball against these guys. We're going to slow it down, run the ball, make their front 7 make plays. That said, their offense is pretty good. And so long as they stay healthy, they should win the division because of this offense. That's the reason why this offense, Jose Pruitt, should be able to be good enough, not just good enough. He should be great enough to be the best. Jose Pruitt will be the best quarterback in the division if they win the division. That's my reason why they'll win the division. What about you, Mike?
For me, offense-wise, Scorched Earth is the reason why they will go all the way and be it, you know, division. Even as far as playoffs and Impact Bowl, things turn out their way. That offense, I feel, is capable enough to support them. Unfortunately, you know, ice cold, meager defense will be the reason why they pick number one.
All right, Jim. One reason why Rapid City will be the Northwest Division champions.
The one reason has to be Jeremy Martin. I look at Jeremy Martin, and you see what he did last year. 1,768 yards, 14 touchdowns, 53 catches, 795 yards. He puts up all the numbers that you get out of a Jose Mackey or a Kurt Robles, and it's in year one.
Yep.
Jose Mackey, in his first year, only ran for 1,460 yards. Kurt Robles, in his first year, even though, you know, he, just like these other two, he took home Rookie of the Year honors, he rushed for 1,260 yards in his first season. 1,768 yards from Jeremy Martin. I think he's going to be that guy who elevates his game. He goes into the MVP talks this year. He's going to be one of those guys, and he's going to be trying to pass Mackey if he starts to fall apart. He's going to try to pass him, or he's going to try to catch and close the gap on Kurt Robles. Mm-hmm. And I think if he can do that, there's no reason why Rapid City's not the division champion. Now, the reason they could fall all the way down and come spiraling down to the ground, overall, I still don't love what they have on defense. It's a work in progress. They're adding new pieces. They're trying to integrate some pieces. If that secondary doesn't create those turnovers like we talked about, it's a big problem. But more so, can they tackle? They're going to try to be fast, aggressive. The problem with the fast-paced defense or the fast-paced offense that scorched earth is if you get too many 3-and-outs in a row, your defense is on the field very quickly. You can see 40-second drives, and now your defense is back on the field. They wear down. There's not a lot of depth. And the next thing you know, your defense is gassed and you're giving up big gains constantly. And that's the quick recipe for a fall from grace.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to touch on just before we go over to Oakland in this case is Jeremy Martin, with the way he had his first season, with the way we're predicting him to possibly elevate his game even more, what do you guys think? More than 5,000 yards by the end of Season 8 for him overall?
For
career total yards?
Yes.
No. He'd need what? He'd need 2,300 or 2,200 because around a little over 2,200.
Because he was around 1,700 this
last
season.
Last year, running and pass receiving, he had 2,500.
I think he could probably get that.
I think he has to if the team's going to win the division.
Okay. Yes. And I think just kind of from an overall player perspective, if he has another one of these seasons where it is like 1,700 or more yards and then he manages to replicate that Season 8 just on the ground alone, yeah, that puts him at like 5,100 rushing yards altogether. So consider if it's no, if there are no injuries, if defenses don't get better around them, I'd say it's feasible. But
in 9 of Rapid City's 16 regular season games, Jeremy Martin took home the Player of the Game award on offense.
Mm-hmm.
9. That is phenomenal. He was the all Hiffle Player of the Week on offense twice last season. You know, the kid has a very bright future, and if he can just take that next step here in year 2 and not fall into a sophomore slump, Rapid City is my favorite team in the division.
Yeah, and the good thing working in his favor, he faces 2 really bad defenses based on last year, but yes. 2 not good run defenses. And then he also plays Pearl Harbor again this season. So that's 5 games against porous defenses where he can rack up. He could probably get 1,000 yards between those 5 games. So 11 other games he can get the other 1,000 rushing. I could see 2,000 from Jeremy Martin this year and be the second ever 2,000-yard rusher. 2,000-yard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So last team in the division, Oakland, the division champs, exited out of after a grueling 4-game stretch where they didn't have much, and when they finally got healthy, they just were gassed, losing to the eventual Western Conference champions, Tombstone. To Sean Pate comes back, broke his neck midseason, a week after James Hill. I mean, we talk about James Hill, and then the next week, to Sean Pate happens, another young guy. Like James Hill, looks like Tashaun Pate will be back, but limited. But you know, is Tashaun Pate is this? We saw last season that the offense kept chugging along because they got William Brewster. Well, I don't think there's going to be a player like William Brewster who gets cut mid-season again.
Well, there is a quarterback in Tombstone, so you never know.
This is true, and it is William Brewster. So. But, you know, maybe Douglas, you know, is to Sean Pate, not only his health, but his production, is that the pivot point for how far this offense can go?
Yes.
Okay.
Are we skipping straight to the last question?
No, we're
done. Is this why they go to last place or win?
No. I'm just asking.
Oh no, I know. I'm
question of like, because
Tashaun Pate is definitely. I mean, the thing is, 5 years and what, $10 million?
Yep.
Yes.
You have invested now. From everything I hear, everyone felt like Tashaun Pate, after his heroics at the end of the Impact Bowl 2 years ago, was really just poised to be the next big star at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Even before the injury this year, he was playing well. But he wasn't playing at a star level.
No.
His completion percent dropped slightly. He had only thrown for less than 1,200 yards, 11 touchdowns with 7 picks. And really, he wasn't running the ball that effectively as a mobile quarterback.
No.
Didn't see a lot. He had to get used to a new team. You know, you're in your second year in the league, and you're learning your second offense, and now you're asked to be the starter. All
and
the
it's
pressure's
a different
on you.
Kind of offense.
You're replacing a guy who had been with the franchise the entire length of its existence. Mm-hmm. And that guy was on the sideline trying to give you instructions.
Yep.
That guy is still there now, But now it's a little different. He's gone and kind of been humbled, and he's really retired this time. And hey, from Jerry Harris and I are both in the fraternity. If we came back, and we shouldn't have, he shouldn't have come back because he didn't play well. I shouldn't have come back because I was held hostage as a backup quarterback fourth running back.
Jim,
I had great success in preseason as a quarterback and running back.
I said, don't do it, Jim. I said, Jim, you plays, don't want to do it.
And to quote my basketball friends, I made buckets.
Jim, but you don't make buckets on a football field. You just make plays.
Oh, didn't you see my touchdown celebration? I got buckets. I said thank you, and then I shot a free throw.
I don't understand. Missouri has changed you for the better. Can you imagine if we went to New York for an all-star game now? The ladies would be in trouble. The ladies were all over you, and you were saying, sorry, Mrs.
Katy Perry changed me there. That's Katy Perry's fault.
Okay.
Well, so anyway, but back to football. Tayshaun Pate, though, big investment, a lot of promise. I'm just wondering if the hype was too big, and we're going to see between the injury and what we saw last year, is Tayshaun Pate really a superstar, or is he just a very good football player? Mm-hmm. If he's just a very good football player in Oakland, it can work even at that high price because they have the most – phenomenal running back factory. Every running back that goes in that backfield somehow becomes a very productive player. From Julius Boyd at fullback, who even though he doesn't get the ball often, when he does, he gets first downs. Cleo Rickard, who was really, I'm surprised he didn't command more money on the open market and didn't go somewhere else as the number one, you know, running back. They've got, you know, Christopher Allen, the cousin or nephew, of Marcus Allen. You've got all these guys. John Payton. I love the addition of John Payton as a bruising back to replace what you lose from Dan Rhodes. They've got all the pieces at the run game. You've still got Alberto Kidwell with that attitude and that fire on offense to keep everybody motivated.
That grown man game.
There were some great commercials coming out of Oakland this offseason.
Their marketing
the billboards
campaign
looked good. You know, I was seeing teams around the league, and we'll name names later, but there were teams that just simply had billboards with pictures of people's faces.
Yeah, and it was kind of just
and I don't
really
know uninspiring. I don't know if the general manager and the PR department just said, hey, we're going to do a billboard for this player and gave no description, and they had nothing to work with, so they just said, hey, slap an action shot, and there he is on a white background. Hey, who is that? Oh, it looks like a guy that plays for this team.
Yeah, hold on real quick.
We saw some real good production in marketing.
Can we pause this part of the conversation? Well, we're going to continue it, but it's just Oakland. I'm speaking directly to the fans of the Oakland Silverbacks, the city of Oakland. Okay,
you're not going to defend that horrible commercial.
Hold on, horrible. That's did you see that?
You have a division rival that call themselves the Lincoln Pride. And they represent themselves as Lions, and you represent one of your best defensive players as a Lion.
Hey. Look,
are you trying to get him to leave next year and go join the Pride?
No, this is what I'm saying, okay? Sure, the Lincoln Pride are a divisional foe, okay? But before there was a Lincoln Pride, there were Lions, okay? Lions have been – they will be there before and
after. Yeah, they're in Detroit.
No, I mean Lions, like African safari
here,
Lions.
Modelo here and I are both players.
Modelo,
what do you if you were the Luchadors, who was a division rival for you guys down there in the ABL?
The Donkeys.
Nobody's gonna put a donkey in a goddamn.
But if somebody put in a commercial and you were being represented by a donkey, wouldn't you kind of think, wait a second, that's my rival?
Would
you imagine if a horse came galloping in to Foxborough Stadium and morphed into Tom Brady?
We would wonder why the Burrow was there in the first place, and then we would probably get considerably upset. And don't get me wrong, I get where Bruno is coming from in that regard, where he's thinking more so of the actual course of nature.
They're
which
all
seemed
pack
like
hunters.
It was, I understand
he's a leader
that.
Of the pack of hunters. The defense are hunters. He's the defensive captain. Bruno, he's the leader of the hunt, like the alpha male dog, the alpha male lioness, and the alpha male caveman hunter.
Bruno,
okay?
I'm trying to defend you here. Calm
would you rather
down.
Me put an orca? God damn it, Jim. Jim, go back.
Why would you put an orca? Did you get hired by the Oakland PR firm?
I may have.
And if it was an orca, then maybe he would go to Miami to be with Dan Rhodes, and you'd have another problem.
I may have suggested something.
When there is a team that is named after something as powerful and brutal as a gorilla, a silverback.
You know what gorillas do when they're not like they send like one one. You only need one to hunt. Okay.
And you only now, need you one. Have, you only need one Bruno, hunter to make plays.
Bruno. That would be great. Are you trying to get into more trouble with the Oakland Silverbacks fan base? Because you're not helping your case right now, man.
Look. Okay. Me and the Oakland Silverbacks have a love hate. Okay. I love them. They hate me. It's understandable. They hate me because I'm closer to GM TJ than they are. I talk to GM.
You know who's closer to GM TJ than anybody? John Chacon.
No, he's not.
Oh, he is very close. No, that year he's going to get closer.
I have heard rumors about that.
No, he's not. I don't know who John Chacon is. I don't know who he is. If I don't know, GM TJ doesn't know. He's a speck. He's a talentless hack. That's who he is.
All right. Look.
Anyways.
Get points on the commercials. One thing that I wanted to touch on in this case.
We need to take a commercial break. We're going to take a commercial break, Producer Bob. Okay? So pump up that PR. Okay? You prep it up. I need to take 5 seconds to cool off because I'm all hype and I can't be hype. I don't get hype. I stay calm. That's my job. We'll be right back on the Hiffle Insiders.
It starts somewhere. I always believed somewhere was where you stood.
And with the 5th pick in the Season 7 High Impact Football League Draft, Orlando selects from Akron University...
Now, that somewhere is here, in Orlando. As part of the Stampede.
Finally.
That's football.
All right, everybody, this is Jim Zebo with Hiffle Insiders. Welcome back. We've got Bruno tranquilized and a little more stable. And yep. El Modelo, Mike Martell, is here with me as well. And we are back talking about the Oakland Silverbacks. Now, before we got off on our tangent and talked about packs of hunting animals, we're talking about Tayshaun Pate. And I was talking about the potential versus the reality. Mm-hmm. And now, Martell, I'm big on last
names. Either way, it's fine.
But what do you really think of for the long-term projection now for Tayshaun Pate after both the injury and getting to see 7 games as a starter versus his spot starts and playoff appearances?
The injury definitely raises a lot of questions, especially given that it is a neck injury akin to what James Hill had in Lincoln, what we've seen a couple of players across sports in general. Neck injuries are not an easy thing to come back from by any means, but... through 7 games, the biggest thing that stuck out to me was the fact that Brewster played about 12 games altogether in regards of games that he started, 12 of them. They had Motto starting one of the games during the process. But for 7 games, Pate threw, 1,169 yards, 62% completion, Longest throw was of 60 yards. The 11 touchdowns, 7 interceptions that we covered with a 91.2% rate on overall. And to me, what sticks out because of that is because Brewster in 12 games managed 2,110 yards, which is still pretty good. 60.8% percentage on completions overall, which is lesser than what Pate had. 12 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. So there wasn't really much of a difference. Yeah, Brewster started more games overall, but he put up Pate, to me, was on pace to have a similar, if not better, season before the injury. And with the weapons that he has around them, with the three-headed beast that they have on the backfield there and the receivers that they got, I don't see why Pate couldn't replicate that level of success, if not go above and beyond what we're expecting of him, to be honest. The injury may play a hand into it, but I'm confident enough that the kid can bounce back and have himself a really good season altogether. Maybe not the superstar promises that we've had that actually were, in a way, almost similar to what Douglas Barnhart had when he initially got drafted into the league, I believe at number 4 overall. Jim, you might have.
Yeah, that's right. He was a 4th overall pick.
Yeah, and I mean, there were a lot of people thinking that he was going to be one of those big upcoming stars under that Long Beach offense, and turned out not to be. And while with Pate, it may not be the case, being on a team like Oakland, I think it's a good fit for him, especially if they do keep that rushing core, keep that three-headed beast still going, keep a good amount of receivers, keep the offensive line that they have, which is just... Wow, would I have loved to have something like that during my time. Kenny Britt is a star.
That offensive line, I mean, I would come back again. I'd quit the Insiders.
Yep.
If Hatton and Elston and their practice squad guy, Roque, went down, all those guys are gone, the Z-Bo is there.
Z-Bo's back.
The Z-Bo. I would become Steven Cotter without the
back
PEDs
again.
Oakland, you lost. Missouri broke you. Oakland put you back together in Bay Area form.
Oh, goodness.
You'd be, hyphy.
Eating broccoli on pizza?
You'd be hyphy. Hyphy. That's what they say, right? I don't know. Look,
I don't know.
The fans in Oakland already hate me, so if I get the terminology wrong, it's whatever. But yeah, I see what you're talking about there, Mike, with Tishon. You know, there's room. 11 touchdowns in 7 games, 7, you know, yes, 4 touchdowns in 1 game against Lincoln, but also 4 interceptions in a win against New Jersey. So you take away those 2 games, that's, 7 touchdowns and 3 interceptions in 5 games. That's still pretty good. If you just want to take out – if you take out his worst game and his best game as a starter, that's still a good touchdown to interception ratio.
Here's some big things, though. We talk about that offensive line.
Yeah.
3 of those 5 starters are Pro Bowlers from a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Fields, Schmidt, and George Britt all made the Pro Bowl. Now, how Christopher Allen didn't make it, he was snubbed.
Well, you look at who's in the Pro – look at who's in his division.
I still feel like when you leave the league in rushing touchdowns in a timeshare.
Agree. Yeah.
266 carries, averaging 5.5 per carry over guys who are averaging 4.
50 carries less than George Pate. Only less than 100 yards less than George Pate.
And the things you look at, and it's all conjecture, and all comes down to who does the voting. But I think Christopher Allen can use that. He's already been a 4th-round pick. He uses his 4th-round pick status as fuel for why he needs to play better. He uses people saying, hey, you're not as good as your family. You're not doing the Allen name right. Well, I think he silenced that.
Oh, yeah.
Now everybody, he is a legitimate number one running back.
Easily.
If he wasn't in Oakland, where it was established already that this committee running back approach works, I would be saying, why isn't he getting 300 carries a year? But he doesn't need them.
But here's the thing. Oakland runs enough where he still had 266 carries in a timeshare.
Yep.
I mean, you look at it. You had 3.
Do you know what Christopher Allen's total would be with the exact same carries and his yards?
Oh, he would have gone over 2,000.
2,293.5 yards if he got Jose Mackey's carries.
Yeah,
that's insane.
And he 17. Imagine how many more touchdowns.
He's pretty one dimensional. He's not a big pass catcher.
But that's
he's a running back. He's not a wide receiver. You have Cleo Rickard. If you want to throw to your swing back, you know, you've got Cleo Rickard there. You've got that offensive line. Alberto Kidwell, I'm just a huge fan of Alberto's. You know, 5 years, oh, sorry, you know, he's played all 6 years in this league, and the man has gone to the Pro Bowl every single year except for in 2012. And that's when he missed a couple of games due to injury. It's his only season not going over 1,000 yards. He's an older player, but look at him. The last three seasons, he has increased his yardage and decreased his catches. Mm-hmm. How he does that is beyond me. And that's just, you know, amazing skill for a guy who's 32 years old.
And he goes and, you know, you talked about pay, you know, whether he can become a superstar or if he's just a really good quarterback, in which case, if he's a really good quarterback, that's still good for Oakland. Why is that a good thing? Because a pretty good quarterback can find Alberto Kidwell open fast enough to get him the ball and let him make the plays.
You know, a bad quarterback will find Alberto Kidwell, because if you don't, Alberto Kidwell will find you.
This is true. You know, you also have George Farrow, who last year, 49 catches for 700 yards. He didn't have the yards, but the catches were sure there. You know, the touchdowns were there. You know, George Farrow is not – he's a good complementary piece to Kidwell. G-Easy, as they're calling him in Oakland.
The big thing I notice when I look at the Silverbacks, they don't try to build that team of superstars at every position. They understand that you are looking for role players in certain positions, and they find guys who fit the role they want. Cleo Rickard, maybe he isn't a number one running back on teams. For them, he's a great change of pace. He's also
you go from fast to even faster.
And they put him out there in the shotgun in the slot, or they put him up there in the fourth receiver in the spread. They do things with him. They move him around and they get use out of him. They draft a John Payton who can play fullback, but also showed last year at Vanderbilt he can play running back very well. They have, you know, I heard they were really trying to get Dak Prescott. They wanted to, or I think it was it Dak?
It was Dak Prescott.
Dak was the rumors I was hearing was Dak Prescott as a, you know, a multi-tool. He could be fullback. He could run. He could play quarterback wherever you need him. They do try to cover their bases. Yep. You know, they've got John Boss as the only extra offensive lineman besides,
Marciano Clark.
Marciano Clark. They've got a couple of backups there on the defensive thing. They don't have a lot of depth on the defensive line.
Mm-mm.
But at the same time, they have extra linebackers. They have a couple of big linebackers who could drop down. They've got the practice squad. You've got a lot of coverage there, and it's hard on a 40-man roster to find that depth.
Yeah,
I think they did a good job. Peter Nixon on defense, solid addition. He's, you know, gets to come back to Oakland late in his career. He's talking about maybe possibly moving over to safety to play a little bit as coverage from the corner slot, even though, you know, he's very versatile. And you've got a lot of good mix of veteran talent along with young up-and-coming ability. Oakland is one of those teams the last couple of years we've seen and gone, hey, this team could go to the Impact Bowl, and something trips them up. Whether it's a heartbreaking last, you know, second loss to Long Beach in the playoffs, if it's losing your quarterback and having to try to replace him in the middle of the season last year, those things happen.
Yeah. I mean, you can go down the list. You got Jerry Harris imploding. In his final season with Oakland, you got you've got Sean Pate going down. You have the entire secondary was
the injuries last year were brutal.
And at the end of the season, it wasn't so much the injuries, but when everybody else was tired, and yet they still ended up winning a couple of games where they probably shouldn't have. And that just goes a testament to the depth and coaching that they have.
And that's now one question I'll let you guys talk. I'll save this for
okay. All right.
Why they'll win and why they won't.
But Mike, you look at this defense. This is the worst defense, at least this worst defensive secondary, and maybe overall defense that Oakland has had in quite some time. And yet they're still the best defense in the division.
Exactly. They're still the best defense in the division. I would even argue they're still one of the top defenses in the conference right now.
Yeah, I mean them in Las Vegas. You look at it, and the last couple of years, the linebackers have kind of been declining. They don't retain Eric Saylor. They ended up getting Gary Tejada from Winnipeg. As soon as they saw Lincoln sent him away and said, "Hey, that's a guy who needs to be in the HIFL. Let's get him." And then You know, they have young defensive ends around Jackie Andrews, who's continuing to, who's 13 years pro, continuing to be a force, and being a guy. And he's not, and not just a force on the field, but at practice, he's sharing with his teammates, how to get here. I think Jackie Andrews definitely has a career after coach or after playing of coaching.
Yeah. And it's just, again, one of those things with the defensive side of things where you still have good pieces all over the place. Joseph Mullins is still going to be great. As mentioned, they have that depth in the secondary, which is key. And in a division, in a conference in general that has a lot of offensive dynamos, having that solid defense is going to make the difference between winning the division to, you know, being middle of the pack. Mm.
And, you know, you look at this team, the big questions, can Donald McClintock, you know, they were so stacked at corner last year that there was no, unless they were going to retain Alfred Glass, that there was no way that they could match what they had in talent-wise.
No, they would have had to jump in the draft high and take mm-hmm. in a guy. And, you know, that's expensive and it's hard to do.
Well, I'll tell you right now.
If you're going to pay that money, you're also going to – why wouldn't you have given that money?
Yeah. I can tell you right now, I did my annual draft tour, and I went to Oakland, and GM TJ told me, he said, hey, you know, off the record? I said, yeah, sure. He said, we want Shane Barkley. Well, we see Shane Barkley. Went to Music City, second draft.
He looks really good in camp.
And, you know – he looked amazing. We'll get to that when we talk about Music City. And, you know, GM TJ, knowing him, he was devastated that he went so high because he thought, I found somebody that nobody else has, and it's a year where we don't have a first-round pick. I found a guy who we can get our number one guy middle of the second round. You know, and for him to go, they kind of, you know, especially after the Alfonso Scott debacle last year, he was hoping to make up by getting somebody that good, but he ended up taking Kyle Van Hoos. The Van Hoos is on the loose.
The Hoos is loose.
He's on the juice.
Now, did any of you guys get a chance to actually go to training camp and look at these guys?
I went. I did not go to Oakland. I went.
Okay, I stopped by Oakland and I got to check out Van Hoos because I was interested in seeing, you know, second round pick. I'm always interested in what can this receiver bring. Comes from TCU. You know, they had decent season. You know, Boykin was a great weapon for them. They had a lot of action going on there.
Very similar to, or a similar style of player to Sean Pate.
Definitely. And when you look at Van Hoos, things I like: 6'2", 222. He's got a solid frame. He's not the shiftiest, but he's got some moves. I like that he's got a good blend of speed and hands. He's not a guy who got a high rating because he's super fast, and he's not a guy who got a rating because he's got amazing hands. He got it because he's got enough of both to be a solid contributor. And when I look and kind of compare him around that team, you know, so if you pull up, you know, you look at Oakland, he's not Alberto Kidwell. Mm-hmm. You know, Alberto Kidwell, one of those one-of-a-kind guys. He's blazing fast,
5'8", who plays well. If you watch Oakland play, Alberto Kidwell would seem like the biggest receiver on the field for them.
Oh yeah,
and they added a 6'4" receiver or tight end in Gene Williams.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at it though, and that man, no matter how small the stature, his voice catapults him up to 7'3".
Oh yeah,
he's a Porzingis on the field.
Yeah,
but Van Hoos has a very similar skill set to George Farrow. The big thing about it is, even though Farrow was a first-round pick, I think Van Hoos might have more upside. You know, he's only 21 years old. He's coming in with a similar offense. He's going to get comfortable eventually, but I think he's a guy who could be a solid starter for the team, you know, later down the line. I think he was a good draft pick. There was a lot of good wide receiver talent in this year's draft.
Very deep draft this year.
Very deep draft for a lot of positions. It's kind of that fallout. You know, teams know, hey, these college players saw, hey, there's expansion teams, there's room for us to get noticed, and they all rushed to the league. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, some of that might drop off in the next couple of years as teams are kind of balancing back out.
Yep.
But this year was a great draft to have picks, and a lot of people with picks are seeing that already in training camp going, hey, these guys are really good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, Mike, on my end of things, obviously, having my sources, I didn't get a chance to check out the training camp as much as Jim did, but using my sources and my own charms, I'll admit, I did get some word from the Oakland office where Mr. Caesar is heavy, big in this team. He is confident enough that this is the year. That this is their year to reach the Impact Bowl at the very least, if not win the whole shebang.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think about – you look at last year, halfway through the season, they're 6-2, tied for the best record with DC. You know, they lost Tayshaun Pate in the middle of their game against DC and still were in it in the end of the game. You know, and they ran out of gas. We're looking at a team, you know, who's got the talent to make it, you know, to be the best team in the conference, in the league. Just need to see it get done. And Jim, before we do the one reason, what was your question? You had a question you wanted to ask pertaining to the team.
Me?
Jim did, yeah. You said you were going to ask a question, and you said, well, I'll save it for the end.
Oh, no. I wasn't going to ask a question. I was going to – it's my point. I'm going to raise
it. Oh, okay. Well, then I'll let you go first. What's your number one reason why Oakland will be consecutive Northwest Division champions?
The run attack. We've talked about these teams with weaker defenses or questions on defense. There's no question that Christopher Allen and Cleo Ricker can run the football against those defenses. John Payton is a guy who's, like I said, I believe he's going to be able to come in and pick up a lot of the slack that gets left from lacking a power back with Dan Rhodes retiring. I just think they're going to be able to run over everybody. And no matter if you can run the football, you can win in this league. The offensive line's there. The running backs are there. The mindset is there. The culture has been established. You run first, you dominate, and then you hit your playmakers when you need to. Now, the reason I believe it could all fall apart, it could all come crumbling down, is still on the offensive side of the ball, and it's actually on the sidelines up in the booth with the clipboard. It's Woodrow Bray. The team has had talent for a long time. They had Jerry Harris. Things kept falling apart. They got Tayshaun Pate and another very talented quarterback, William Brewster, last year. Things didn't click. I'm still hearing out of camp, the offensive mini camps aren't producing the amount of production you really want when you're doing the specialized training.
Mm-hmm.
When you go, hey, we're going to send our rookie or whoever it is for an extra week of training just in this one category, you expect him to have some really good results. And when you're consistently seeing it across the board that you're not getting that production, you start to look at the coaches that are in charge of that camp. Yep. Woodrow Bray, while yes, he can help run the football, I'm not seeing a lot of that development that you want to see. He's on a contract year. It's a big year for him. He's on a team-friendly deal at $3 million as an offensive coordinator. Not just that. He's the offensive coordinator with a defensive-minded head coach.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of control there, and he's making only $1 million more than Jerry Harris. But do they bring him back, or do they let him walk and they go somewhere else? That's all going to come down really to me this year, how these guys progress throughout the year and how they finish, because we've already said they – need to get the Impact Bowl from everything we're hearing. GMTJ's been great there, but if they struggle and they have a falling off and they don't make the playoffs,
oof.
Do you start looking at changes? Do you say, hey, you get one more year, coach has got to go? Or do you say, hey, you should have made the correct adjustments beforehand? Where does this go? Somebody's job could be on the line if Oakland doesn't produce this year.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Mike, what's your one reason why Oakland will successfully defend their division crown?
I'm going to say for sure that defensive core, especially with the secondary. I know they don't have Alfred Glaster anymore, but I still think overall that some of its parts is going to result into some great things altogether here and help lead them into, you know, further into the playoffs and hopefully an Impact Bowl. You know, the defense wins championships, as they say. And For me, I was lucky enough to have a great defense with Mexico City that helped us get to that point as well, along with some playmakers. Mm. To me, the one thing that could have Oakland picking number one overall is if the coordinators melt down. Keep in mind, not only do we have Woodrow Bray as an offensive coordinator in the troubles that Jim already mentioned, you also have Jerry Harris as well, too, at the assistant spot, who seems to have a completely different perspective on the offense compared to what Bray has. And that could be a little clash here and there. We could see something maybe escalate, even with the culture, even with all these different things in place in Oakland. If it feels to me like if one gear comes loose, it could just make this team tear itself apart in somewhat similar ways to what we've seen these past few seasons. And from what ownership and things are indicating, this is the one season where they're looking to go all the way, and they're not going to accept anything else as a result.
Yeah, I looking at this team, they're a division champion, so it's very hard. It's very hard, and it's going to be the same way for Las Vegas, DC, and New Jersey. Might not be so much for Jersey after the offseason they had, but still, for DC, Vegas, and Oakland, it's tougher to be like, all right, how do they drop so far? But there's the one thing, and it's what we started this conversation with. So Sean Pate is not healthy, if he gets hurt, and he misses significant time, in this division, they cannot afford to have some down games. So Sean Pate needs to be healthy. He needs to play like he did. He needs to pick up where he left off last season and continue to develop into the player that Oakland believes he will be. They made the trade for Cornelius Ellison, a player who I know they scouted and thought he's a game manager. But as far as a backup, the way we run our offense, we're not asking too much of a guy. Anyways, you look at Edward Matos last year. He almost went into he almost led a win over Rapid City in week two. When Sean Pate was serving a suspension, but the one reason why they're going to win the division, it's now that they have balance on offense and defense.
Mm-hmm.
Last couple of years, it's always been, hey, the defense is our key. Offense, give us enough points to have us win. You know, the defense is going to do its job. Offense, give us enough. Now you know they went and made a move. They made a move to acquire Roger Perez and flipped, and along with Roger Perez taking him on, they got Gene Williams from Tombstone, who was their second leading receiver. Gene Williams, very good tight end, another target, a big target for Sean Pate, an improvement over Alphonso Scott and Ross Sherry of last season. You still have Allen, Rickard, Payton. You added Kevin Van Hoos, Robert Fenton. Is, from what I hear, is not going to be as much of a wide receiver, but he's going to be a hybrid between, because his run blocking, apparently, he's one of the best run blocking receivers in the last couple of years. I think he's going to get some looks as a tight end in some formations.
Mm-hmm.
But they're balanced. They've figured out, okay, defense, we don't have to spend so much. We don't need the big names. We can have some guys who overperform, who are vets. I mean, they replaced Alfred Glass. They wanted Teddy Schumacher, didn't get him. Ended up with Donald McClintock, who last year had a pretty good season. I believe he had double-digit pass defense, almost double-digit interceptions for an overachieving Orlando. Make him the number two next to Joseph Mullins. It's not so bad. They got some balance on offense and defense. This is a team that can win either way, with offense or defense or special teams. They had one of the best return games last year because of Cleo Rickard, and he's back as their kick returner and punt returner. Mm-hmm. They're three-faceted team, three-prong attack. So it's the Northwest, fellas. Feels good. Jim, I'm happy you are back.
Of course.
It is great to have you back. You don't hate Colgate?
Oh, I dislike Colgate.
Okay.
I'm indifferent to Colgate.
You're a pressed man.
I'm indifferent to Colgate, personally.
Yeah, so Mike, I was about to ask you how you feel about Colgate University. It's a pleasure to have you as a part of the HIFL Insiders.
It was a pleasure to be here.
I imagine, a little bit later, we'll get, some more divisions. I know Roy Baker will be on for the Southeast preview, maybe even the Northeast, because that's where Roy's located. He's in the East. Jim's located out to California. He's a Cali man now. Like I said, people, Missouri has broken Jim Zebo. His morals are a lot looser than they were before. Ladies, Jim Zebo is a new man.
760-613-1768.
And then El Model, Mike, Martel also is he's a new man. He's literally he's new here.
At technically, Eden. And yes, and still very much single. So
there you go.
But of course, go to my friend Jim first. He needs it.
Jim? Jim's there?
Need. Oh. I've got a Heisman, a handful of national championship rings.
And a fat pocket.
A couple fat pockets.
Well,
this that's is... not a selfie stick in my pocket.
Yeah, no, that is not.
See you.
I mean, I've got my APL ring. I'm fairly happy with it.
Yeah. And I have, I'm the first.
It's always good to win the minor leagues.
I'm the first and last voice you hear on the Hipple Insider. So
I believe the last voice I usually hear on the Insiders is somebody screaming out War Eagle.
That doesn't count. I'm the last actual coherent voice. Roy's going to give me crap for that. I can't. Roy Baker, Jimmy Miner, Uncle Tony will stop by. Because now that you're back, I believe Uncle Tony has said he's going to. Cause Uncle Tony was apparently a big Missouri fan, even though he was a New Jersey fan. But Uncle Tony will be around. Roy Baker will be around. We might have some more people. The Hiffle Insiders, we're expanding. We're like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, okay? We're all connected. You might get some FBL voices. Never know.
Welcome to phase two of the initiative.
For El Model, Mike Martel, and Jim Zebo, both back and here for the first time, I'm Bruno Salson, thanking you for coming on the inside with us, and we'll see you on the outside.